Remember the swine flu scare of 1976? That was the year the U.S. government told us all that swine flu could turn out to be a killer that could spread across the nation. And Washington decided that every man, woman, and child in the nation should get a shot to prevent a nationwide outbreak, a pandemic.
Dr. David Sensor, then head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, is now in private industry. He devised the swine flu program, and he pushed it.
You began to give flu shots to the American people in October of 76.
October 1st.
By that time, how many cases of swine flu around the world had been reported?
There had been several reported, but none confirmed.
Where did this so-called deadly variety of flu, where did it first hit back in 1976? It began right here at Fort Dix in New Jersey in January of that year when a number of recruits began to complain of respiratory ailments, something like the common cold.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Saturday, June 19th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. It's going to hopefully be a little bit shorter than usual. I've got a couple main topics that I think are really important, pushed off a lot of the around the edge stuff for today to make sure we can focus on the most important things. Now, as the title makes clear, we're going to be talking about something that we've talked about a little bit before, but really making some fine-tuned points about big topics that have been continually dismissed despite the breadth of evidence completely backing up what we're going to talk about today. One of which is the DNA and the possible integration of genes from SARS-CoV-2 into your DNA and whether the vaccine itself, the injection itself, can cause this sort of discussion to happen. You know, the reason I say it like that is because of how opaque and abstract they make this conversation about it, whether it alters your DNA and the definition of that, and how even though there are things that can be clearly within the conversation of, put it this way, things that would make Americans uncomfortable if they knew what was really going on, that they just go debunked because it doesn't meet this exact fine-tuned definition of one part of one thing we're discussing. And I've gone over a lot of that in the past show, but we're going to go through multiple scientific studies, which we've already discussed in the past, and some new ones, which continue to point out, at the very least, it's very likely this is happening right now. And yet they go, there's nothing that makes this make sense. There's no science that backs up that this is happening. Fake news. But there's all the science we're going to show you today. Not telling you we know for sure, but saying there it is. So why are they pretending it's not there? Now, we're also going to go through and talk about some interesting discussions around the spike protein again. But I wanted to give a shout out to the Dark Horse podcast and this discussion that people have been sharing with me. It's a little bit redundant from what we've already talked about, but it's worth your time to go through this because these are experts who are confirming exactly what I've been saying. Which is just adding to that is continually powerful. The more we can build this, you know, the show that what we've been talking about, not my opinion, but based on the science and other experts, is continuing to be bolstered by more and more experts, more people who have credentials and the right to speak on it, far more than the Fox News and CNNs of the world, and are telling you that they're wrong. Not only wrong, but they're in fact lying to you. One of which involved in that conversation is one of the people, one of the inventors of mRNA vaccines, who I mentioned recently telling you, Robert Malone, telling you that this stuff is potentially dangerous. And based on his information from the inside, he is concerned. And no one wants to talk about this stuff. And as well as the fact that it finds its way into your blood and a lot of these other conversations. Now, we're going to put a lot of this stuff to bed today, as we have before. Think of today in a way sort of challenging these narratives they hold around things that are already obvious, like the PCR test, which is going to be one of the first things we talk about today. It's so painfully obvious, as we all know. Even people who believe in this whole agenda are still kind of going like, well, the PCR test is not very, you know, the information's clear. They just continue to rely on it. And we're going to debunk that today yet again, as well as an interesting discussion, one is what I tried to say right there, about psychosis around the vaccine discussion and how there are doctors pointing out that there's an interesting correlation here. And then they get attacked and censored or censured and completely pushed aside because they said what you're not supposed to, at least not yet. Because of course, we'll find out a year from now that now it's okay to talk about and that doctor still loses their job. Who cares? Right. But let's jump into it and start off with something right out of the gate. No preamble today, except what I just did. We're going to jump right into the opening points here. Make sure, okay, just making sure that's still there. And this is going to be around COVID-19 to start. Now, first of all, just to show you, you know, starting off from the point of the people that are carrying the water for this narrative, right? The media, people like Neil Ferguson, and that the fact that this is still going, it has not stopped. And it's the same people. The same people who have been continually wrong, not only wrong, but shown clearly, definitively by their own people, less, you know, just mainstream media, if you will, to be actually dishonestly misleading, like knowingly altering things to lean into what they want. And we've gone over all this in past shows. A lot of people have. How it turns out that the information they used to make that 3.6% infection fatality rate argument in the beginning was subjective. That they made estimates that then used to build that narrative. Estimates based on things that were not scientific. Yet here we are, still happening. Now, this is the reality of where we are right now. June 17th, breaking. Politics for All says Professor Neil Ferguson says he is more optimistic about Britain's COVID fight against the Indian variant than he has previously been. And as somebody rightly comments down here tagging me, ha ha ha, they're still listening to Fergie. I mean, I'm just baffled that they would even pretend that this, like, usually when this kind of thing happens, they quietly shove these people to the side and let them go away. So we stop wrecking, you know, associating the problem narrative with this very obviously faulty person. But nope, here we are. I said, just seriously, why is anyone still taking Niels Ferguson seriously? Honest question. That's not because it's not personal. He has a horrible track record repeatedly before COVID, catastrophically getting things wrong. Then we enter into the COVID sphere. And yes, we all know he was really, really wrong. Him and Imperial College London, in my opinion, knowingly misled you. So it looked real bad. Then twice more during this process, he has been shown to be catastrophically wrong. Once with the early variant discussion, and again, with multiple times throughout this, but not to belabor the point, why are we still listening to these people? Why are we still listening to the people that we know are lying to us, who have been shown to be dishonest, who have taken actions that benefit themselves at your expense? Here's Lori Lightfoot. This leads into the idea of how they're abusing the situation based on the information that they're using. I mean, here we have Neil Ferguson again selling you a narrative that keeps this thing going in a sense of emergency. Now we've got these politicians picking it up and going, well, I know we're all quite realizing we're not in as much danger as we thought. So, here's a new thing. Oh, a state of emergency for racism. And we're going to use COVID funds for that. Because that's totally legitimate, right? We take money from your pocket under the guise that we're fighting a very dangerous thing that's not very dangerous, in fact, for your protection. And then we're just going to shift that over into racism. Right, because that's not completely illegitimate in a political sense. I mean, in any sense. But this is what's happening. And this is what I'm calling, at least in the show today, the state of emergency politics. This is where we are now. Sort of like, I mean, really, this started with 9/11. We've never not been in a state of emergency since 9/11. That's why these things have continued in different variations of our society. Now, here we are finding federal level states of emergency for COVID-19 that have allowed all of this to continue. And here we have underlings of this illusion continuing to grab on to that power. So how long will the public state of emergency continue to go around and round and round and get renewed so she can keep taking money from your pocket under a guise of something else to fight something that is an opaque, nebulous idea that will never go away? Sort of like fighting terrorism, which makes no sense, right? If you're fighting a terrorist, well, that would make sense in the English language. To defeat terrorism is a never-ending war that's never supposed to end. And this is the same concept. Defeating racism or an emergency to stop it is ridiculous. We can all acknowledge that there's racism in the world. Now, to take action against people's opinions is where this is going wrong. And this is where they want you to think is necessary. We need to suss out these ideas in people's brains and end it forever. People actually believe this. And this is where the technocratic part comes in, the whole Internet of Things. And you see where this is all going. But where we are now is the simple removing, shifting the illusion over to something else. And it's the same concept we're seeing here in California. Gavin Newsom orders suddenly today or yesterday, state of emergency. Oh, excuse me, 2 days ago. I just saw it today. State of emergency due to the California heat wave, a state of emergency for something that we deal with every year. Well, sure, there's a lot of problems that come along with the heat waves. It can be pretty crazy. There's plenty of old people every year that simply die in the street because they get caught out in a heat wave or something happened. You know, lots of possibilities, but just because it's that hot and they have issues with it, right? It doesn't mean that suddenly we need to declare an emergency, right? Because things happen all the time. It's not okay that people die, or it's well, let's put it this way. It's normal that people die, but it's not just something that we just blithely dismiss. But every time people suddenly are in a situation where there's a problem doesn't mean you declare a state of emergency. This is what they're abusing this and hoping that you go, well, what, you don't care about those people? Well, that's not what I said. But the state of emergency is not about people. It's about Gavin Newsom's power grab and his abuse of that power. And right now, we are seeing this heat wave and a strain on the energy grid he's telling you is justifiable to continue the state of emergency that gives him the power to keep the things happening the way they are. The lockdowns, the arbitrary mandates of your life that you don't get to make, apparently we don't have any say over, despite that being 100% illegal. The frustrating part is this is just the beginning, and it's not even new. But right now, it's almost seamlessly, simultaneously, in fact, shifting into other states of emergency that will continue the very same new normal that you've become accustomed to, hopefully not. But here's the frustrating part is, as I always show you, whether it's about water infrastructure for California, as they go, oh no, we're in a drought, we need money. And I show you the last 45 grants they've gotten from your government out of your pocket, not grants, but you know, money they've gotten from your government out of your pocket just in 2020, specifically for infrastructure for water. And then you go, okay, where did all that go now that they're pleading for more money? Same thing here. A report highlights research that makes California's electric grid more resilient, reliable. Apparently that didn't work. This is from May 5th. Electric program investment charge. Each year, more than $130 million in EPIC funding. And so you can see here's EPIC itself, electric program investment charge program for California Energy Commission. It's invested in projects that advance the environmental sustainability, reliability, and affordability of the electric system. Okay, focused clearly on sustainability, you know, the direction they want all this to go, which I'm not saying is even a bad thing in reality. Not the way the government's abusing those concepts disingenuously, but simply the idea that we have a sustainable planet and different from a personal level, such as being able to grow crops and regrow them and not have to depend on other things. But the point is, from the way the government's abusing the concept of sustainability, as we see with Agenda 2030 and Great Reset and everything, like that's the problem. But what they're doing is advancing these things they claim, but then seemingly not solving the real problem, which is the current issue of the electric grid or the current issue of water infrastructure. But this lofty projection forward, right? Well, at least that's what they claim. But it says from 2012 to 2020, EPIC supported more than 380 projects with $846 million in funding, resulting in 3,500 jobs and $3.5 billion in private investment raised by awardees. Okay, great. So where'd all that go? Grid resiliency is a focus for EPIC investments. Cool. As he's screaming, uh-oh, grid energy problems. We need money and we need a state of emergency. Of particular concern to California are the impacts of extreme weather events, wildfires, right? Things that we're all aware of that have been there for a really long time. Since 2012, EPIC has invested more than $151 million in benefits and on and on. The point is, this is always there. So as they're now telling you that we need a state of emergency for the problem that we all knew was going to happen every single year, and that they continue to use the justification for to make more money off your problem and don't actually fix the problem, realize that we're staring at a mafia, organized crime. Your government is exactly that they're continually using your plights to squeeze money out of you yet again. Which brings us over into the illusion to start of the PCR test. Every one of these is going to be something that they keep using, but we're going to show you clearly some of these for the second, third, fourth time that this is wrong, that we know it is. The information's clear. Trust the science, except all the other science that we don't like you to see. Now, here's the first part. Disclose pointing out this new document is showing you that positive PCR test results, as we all know already, do not sufficiently prove that people infected with SARS-CoV-2 can infect others with the coronavirus. New research that included 190,000 results from 160,000 people at a facility in Germany. All right, here's the information itself being dismissed by all the experts that don't like the real information. Right, I mean, I'm trying being facetious, to be honest, but look, expert or not, people are wrong. People can be misled. People can be confused. They can take things at face value because that's how they were trained. Just because someone is an expert doesn't mean that they're always right. All I'm saying is there's plenty of experts, doctors, scientists out there that are very, very, very strongly telling you that this is wrong, that this is not the right tool, and that it's being used in a way that's deceiving people, whether intentionally or not. Yes, there's also experts that would say the opposite. But how about instead of trusting what an expert says, we look at the actual data? That's what I'm always saying. But see, they want you to go, don't do that because you're not smart enough to understand what these sentences say. Yeah, that's pretty crazy because clearly these things are written in a way that makes them easy to understand. They just don't want you to read it. I'm not saying you understand how they got to that conclusion, but when they list a conclusion, it's typically pretty easy to understand. And here it is for you. In light of our findings, and please read the whole thing for yourself. In light of our findings that more than half of individuals with positive PCR test results are unlikely to have been infectious, RT-PCR test positivity should not be taken as an accurate measure of infectious SARS-CoV-2 incidence. Our results confirm the findings of others that the routine use of positive PCR tests results as the gold standard for assessing and controlling infectiousness fails to reflect the fact, quote, that 50 to 75% of the time an individual is PCR positive, they are likely to be post-infectious. Now, remember, that's the term they're using in the case of post-infectious. That could also apply to someone who simply is not even sick. That's the point of this. But you see, this is the reality. I really hope you'll read this all for yourself. The point today is not meant to be as long as possible, but I'm going to go through a couple other points here. The reality being is this whole study, May 31st, 2021, very recent, medical doctors, PhDs, right? A bunch of anti-science fringe conspiracy theorists, according to the mainstream media, the performance of the SARS-CoV-2 RT-PCR test as a tool for detecting SARS-CoV-2. It's exactly what they were trying to find. And guess what? They found exactly what I just read you, that this is not the proper tool. And in fact, 50 to 75% of the time, people are being told that they're positive when they're actually not, or at the very least, not possibly infectious, which is the, I mean, at this point, for the context of this discussion, the same thing. And that's what everybody honest is telling you around this conversation, which is the point, which is why I want to show you something else in this discussion as well. That we're talking about a problem around this PCR test that we all know is there. Something that Anthony Fauci said on the This Week in Virology podcast on July 16th, 2020. Let me play for you again for the thousandth time.
Again, a good question. And what is now sort of evolving into a bit of a standard that if you get a cycle threshold of 35 or more, that the chances of it being replication competent are minuscule.
Right. So if you go over 35 cycle threshold, the chances of this doing what you're trying to accomplish accurately are minuscule. According to Dr. Fauci, it being replication competent, the chances are minuscule if you go over 35 cycle threshold. Right? So Fauci says this on July 16, 2020, as a matter of fact, as if it's common knowledge, despite the fact that in the information going out to these groups that are using this includes people like Anthony Fauci. So he's well aware that while he's saying this, people are being told to use that or higher, which, by the way, as I pointed out 100,000 times as well, you can see right here on the instructions for use from the WHO that they list 45 cycle threshold, right? As well as the fact that it simply says right here that all clinical samples should exhibit fluorescence growth curves in the CY5 channel that cross the threshold line within 40 cycles, right? So under 40. So right there, they're giving them the opportunity to go to 40. Now, I've shown you all the other documents as well that clearly cite this as the 40, the point where they're allowed to go to 40 cycle threshold. And according to Dr. Fauci, that clearly makes that not replication competent, which translates into false positives, according to this study, as well as plenty of others, as they cite in this, as they confirm what the others have already found, right? This is coming from Germany, right? This was concluded more than once. There's multiple locations out there. I believe, was it Norway? I'm blanking on the other locations. There's at least two others that have found the same thing, that have they're stopped using it because they know that based on the very clear science, this is not actually the right tool. And why have we heard this before? Because Kerry Mullis has told us this before. We've heard this before because this is not a secret, according to the person who made this. Now, I know they tried to make this out to be something that it's not and said, well, he wasn't talking about that. But remember, they already fact checked their fact check and came back around and said, oh, wait a minute. He did say that, but it's being misinterpreted. Remember, James Lyons Weiler pointed this out, and we've shown you that already. So let's watch what he actually says on two different videos, and you can come to your own conclusions about it. You know, shocking how that works, right?
I want to ask this to Kerry. How do they misuse PCR to estimate all these supposed free viral RNAs that may or may not be there?
I think misuse PCR is not quite... I don't think you can misuse PCR. No, the results, the interpretation of it. See, if you can say, if they could find this virus in you at all, and with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. It starts making you believe in the sort of Buddhist notion that everything is contained in everything.
So his first point, simply saying that if you, you know, and this is the point, if you cycle in far enough, you'll find anything in anybody, right? And that's exactly the point. He knows that. He stated this. That's accepted. Even Fauci will openly tell you in the middle of 2020 that if you go past that certain number, which everyone seems to be using, and we just reported the other day, another person telling you they spoke to their nurse and they're currently using 45 cycle threshold. I was actually just going over a tweet thread where a nurse was arguing with somebody about how we use 45 cycle threshold, and that's not, and that's totally acceptable. I didn't even include it today because I'm trying to get away from the in and out of the, you know, the Twitter dialogue, because it just seems like such a waste of time. But it's right there. We all see it. And there's even nurses online defending it. And Fauci would tell you that that makes no sense. But we're still doing it today.
Else, right? I mean, because if you can amplify one single molecule up to something that you can really measure, which PCR can do, then there's just very few molecules that you don't have at least one single one of them in your body, okay? So that could be thought of as a misuse of it, just to claim that it's meaningful. But the real misuse of it is that you don't need to test for HIV. You don't need to test for the other 10,000 retroviruses that are unnamed also in the subject. See, somebody that's got HIV generally is going to have almost anything that you can test for, because they have definitely been, HIV is a fairly rare virus. There's only 1 million of us out of 250, 300 million people in America that have that virus. So you have to get around, either your mother had to have it and pass it to you, or you have to really be paying a lot of attention to people that do have it and paying only attention to them and get a pretty good chance of getting it that way. It's hard to get it, but if you have it, there's a good chance you've also got a lot of other ones. Because you've been in the market for, it's been possible for you to get a lot of, to test for that one and say that has any special meaning is what I think is the problem. Not that PCR has been misused. It's like,
is it an estimation?
It's not an estimation. No, it's a really quantitative thing. It tells you something about nature and about what's there, but it allows you to take a very minuscule amount of anything and make it measurable, and then talk about it in meetings and stuff like it is important. See, that's not a misuse. That's just sort of a misinterpretation.
Right. But see, and what's funny is he goes on to argue more strongly as time goes on that in fact, misuse is exactly the point. But see, what he's arguing there is not that it's not potential to be, not that somebody couldn't be dishonest, right, and use that for a dishonest purpose. What he's saying is the simple context of the discussion, this process being done this way, without any, you know, influence on it, is simply just, it's just is what it is, and people are misinterpreting that. But you could obviously argue that that misinterpretation could be done intentionally, which then would be obviously misuse. I mean, I think that goes without saying.
I read a paper by Gutenberg in which he said, even after all PCR, this quantitative PCR, that if you just get down to a basic virological count, it's still 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 10,000.
They call HIV, and what's been brought out here by Philpott and Isai already, the measurement for it is not exact at all. It's not as good as our measurement for things like apples. An apple is an apple.
I'm going to leave this one here just because it's whatever reason this seems to be freezing up on me, but I'm going to grab the other one really quickly. One more clip from him, which is really powerful. This is later, and when it's specifically about Dr. Fauci. Now, this isn't exact. I mean, it's about PCR in general, but or in part, but in general, it's more about Fauci and how this is being abused by powerful people. Now, this is an important one in the context of Dr. Fauci and how this is being used today. Now, this is just because Kerry Mola said this doesn't mean that it's 100% true, right? I believe it's true, but just because he says it doesn't then make it true, but it's valid. Or it's important, relevant, because he is the inventor of the PCR test that they're currently using to justify all that they're doing. right? I mean, this is as absurd as Dr. Boyle, right? The drafter of the Biowarfare Act that the U.S. government still uses right to this day, standing up and saying things about how they're using it. And then they disparage him as a conspiracy theorist, right? It's just, it's really strange how they keep doing this, but listen for yourself.
What is it? What is it about humanity that wants to go to all the details and stuff and listen? You know, these guys like Fauci get up there and start talking. You know, he doesn't know anything really about anything. And I'd say that to his face. Nothing. The man thinks you can take a blood sample and stick it in an electron microscope, and if it's got a virus in there, you'll know it. He doesn't understand electron microscopy, and he doesn't understand medicine, and he should not be in a position like he's in. Most of those guys up there on the top are just total administrative people, and they don't know anything about what's going on the bottom. You know, those guys have got an agenda, which is not what we would like them to have, being that we pay for them to take care of our health in some way. They've got a personal kind of agenda. They make up their own rules as they go. They change them when they want to. And they smugly, like Tony Fauci, does not mind going on television in front of the people that pay his salary and lie directly into the camera. You can't expect the sheep to really respect the best and the brightest. They don't know the difference, really. I mean, I like humans, don't get me wrong, but basically there's a vast majority of them do not possess the ability to judge who is and who isn't a really good scientist. I mean, that's a problem. That's a main problem, actually, with science, I'd say, in this century, because science is being judged by people. Funding is being done by people who don't understand it.
Exactly. Can you trust
Fauci? Fauci doesn't know enough to, you know. If Fauci wants to get on television with somebody who knows a little bit about this stuff and debate him, he could easily do it because he's been asked. I mean, I've had a lot of people, president of the University of South Carolina, ask Fauci if he'd come down there and debate me on the stage in front of the student body, because I wanted somebody who was from the other side to come down there and balance my, because I felt like, well, these guys can listen to me, but I need to have somebody else down here that's going to tell me the other side. But Fauci didn't want to do it.
Now, there's no discernible reason why that should be glitching the way it is. It drives me bananas, and I don't understand why this is happening every time. But it doesn't matter. I'm not wasting more time on that. But apologize for the way it's glitchy. The clips will be in there for you to look at for yourself. It's flying internet right now. I really have no idea why it's happening. But as we continue forward, as I want to just punch a hole in the wall every time that happens. All right. So going forward, you know, as I said, here are the clips that you can watch for yourselves. I mean, it's powerful stuff to see this, that contrasts the narrative. And again, the actual scientific research is very clearly continuing to show you this is the case. And yet we're still doing it. In fact, at a cycle threshold that both Fauci and everyone else seems to acknowledge is a false positive direction. And we still keep doing it. Which, again, to include this in the PCR discussion for people that haven't seen it, this is exactly what's happening now. And we know this. This is a New York Times article. It's simply called Faith in Quick Tests Leads to Epidemic That Wasn't. And I've brought this up many times to just very quickly rehash this for people. It's called The Story of the Epidemic That Wasn't. And as it says, for months, people involved in this basically thought they had a whooping cough outbreak. Thousands of healthcare workers were furloughed. People went home. They were given tests and all this stuff went on. Thousands were given antibiotics, vaccines for protection. This went on for months. Not a single case of whooping cough was actually confirmed with the definitive test, right? The growing of bacteria, the test in a lab, not a single case. So how is that possible? It says now as they look back on the episode, epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists say the problem was that they placed too much faith in a quick and highly sensitive molecular test that led them astray. Can you guess what test that was? Infectious disease experts say such tests are coming into increasing use. Remember, this is back in 2007, right? So in 2007, they're going, man, this test, we relied on that too heavily. We can't let that happen again. As it says, there is no national data on pseudoepidemics caused by an over-reliance on such molecular tests, says Trish M. Pearl, who is an epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins, of course. She says the pseudo-epidemics, like this one, happen all the time, apparently. The Dartmouth case may have been one of the largest, but it certainly by no means is an exception, she said. Guess what? At Dartmouth, the decision to use the PCR test of course, still being an acronym back then because we weren't as familiar with it. Well, that is what happened. They used a PCR test, and as they admit themselves back in 2007, was their over-reliance on that one test was exactly what created the epidemic that wasn't. And they go, well, we need to learn from this and not do it again, you mean. Learn from it and use that to deceive people? Yes, that's probably what you meant. The reality is this is an obvious, obvious connection to what we're dealing with today. The only problem was their over-reliance on the test that, guess what, today we're over-relying on. Do you think that's an accident? It's all there for you to look at, guys. I don't know how we can pretend that this is not a clear choice that leads to the problem we're living in. The PCR illusion, the linchpin of where this is, which leads to the justification for their dangerous vaccines being pushed around the guise of why we're all sick, even though the test is part of the illusion. But the point is, there's plenty more people in this country that see what you see, and the media just does not want you to know that. Right? That they see that this is sort of an illusion. They see that not only is it not necessary, they also see that the justification for why we need that is built on this illusion. So why would we then take something that is not approved? It's experimental, based on something that smart people are aware is not actually as serious as they're making it out to be. Well, that's exactly why a majority of physicians are in fact declining the shot, according to a recent survey, despite what they keep telling you. Now, this is what I keep screaming about the actual majority. Now, yes, this is just a survey, right? It doesn't guarantee this is the exact picture, but what it does show you is that it's a huge contrast to what they want you to believe. And at the very least, as the article points out, it shows you that it's not as one-sided as they want you to think it is. As it says, of the 700 physicians responding to the survey, this is the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Nearly 60% said they were not fully vaccinated. 60%. This contrast with the claim, and by the way, these are all people that aren't like in the process. These were people that were offered this first. So as of this whole time past, still 60% of them are not. It says this contrasts with the claim by the American Medical Association that 96% of practicing physicians are fully vaccinated, except that was only based on 300 people. Right? So you can see how these things can be skewed. So more than double that amount and you find a 60% saying no. It's odd how drastically that changed, isn't it? It's almost like they want you to think that everyone's taking it. Neither survey represents a random sample of all American physicians, but the AAPS survey shows that physician support for the mass injection campaign is far from unanimous. Quote, it says, it's wrong to call a person who declines a shot an anti-vaxxer, according to the AAPS executive director, Jane Orrant, medical doctor. Quote, virtually no physicians are anti-antibiotic or anti-surgery, whereas all are opposed to treatments that they think are unnecessary, more likely to harm than to benefit an individual patient or inadequately tested. Now, see, the point is whether or not you agree with that, the main point is that if a doctor feels that way, whether incorrect or not, they have the right, as an expert doctor trained to make these decisions, to say, I'm going to not recommend this. That doesn't then immediately make them anti-vax, does it? It makes them using their own education based on the data in front of them, even if incorrect, to make their educated opinion or assessment. You see what I mean? But so because they make their opinion, and that I want to stress again, even if they may be wrong, suddenly it's an all one-stroke anti-vax crazy. This is childish. We all know that anytime we see trust all women, every single healthcare worker is a hero, right? Isn't it dumb how quickly those things dissipate the moment that starts to fall apart, like when we see 60% of nurses also refusing the shot? Why can't we then apply that to the next part? Everybody say no is anti-vax. Well, no, that's really stupid. Because that's not what's happening. As it says, the AAPS survey also showed that 54% of physicians respondents were aware of patients suffering a, quote, significant adverse reaction. Right? So they're watching what's happening, and that's influencing their decision. Of the unvaccinated physicians, 80% of them said, quote, I believe risks of the shots exceeds the risk of the disease. Why? Because they're smart enough to look at the data. It's very, very obvious. And they said 30% said, I already had COVID. So here's an interesting caveat. 30% of them are just going, I've got natural immunity. Why do I need this? And they're being called anti-vax. Think about how ridiculous that is. And I've shown you this, and I'll show it again in a minute, of their nature, you know, that anti-science rag, telling you, had COVID, you'll probably make antibodies for the rest of your life, according to the fact that it's in your bone marrow and on and on. So How is it possible that everyone who says no is anti-vax, if those 30%, according to the science, clearly have a natural immunity that can last forever and don't actually need it? And plenty of other studies have followed up on that and said, even though they, if they want to take it, it's in fact not only not giving them any more benefit, it could potentially cause more damage. That's science coming from reputable places telling you that. Here we are, they're anti-vax. Other reasons for declining the shot included unknown long-term effects. Use of aborted fetal tissue. Quote, it's experimental. Availability of effective early treatment and reports of deaths and blood clots, right? All these things are 100% accurate. And yet, doesn't matter. If you say no, you're an anti-vax no matter what. And that's why they're hiding this information from you. As I said, this is the real majority showing its face. A very important point to not gloss over. Based on the mainstream narrative, the majority, so if you're taking this at face value, based on the mainstream narrative, apparently the majority of doctors in this country are currently anti-science, fake news, conspiracy theorists. Or maybe, just maybe, you're being lied to. Think about that for a second, right? The reality of how can it be that this fringe of anti-vaxxers is causing all this problem when apparently that's the majority of the country? That's a little bit hard, isn't it? Right? I mean, look, I'll look it up right now. I didn't even look yet today. I can promise you that U.S. vaccine rate, that it's below the majority, 45%. Now, I don't know why we can even trust these numbers, to be quite honest, because I know that it's just as easy. They could just change it, lie. But nonetheless, despite their ability to be able to manipulate and lie about everything else, it's still showing you quite clearly that we are not even past 50%. Fully vaccinated, meaning that that's not. So the majority of people in this country are on the same side as the doctors that don't want this, the same side as the nurses that don't want this. We are the majority. And yet they keep pushing. COVID vaccine backlash among West Australian aged care nurses as hundreds in survey threaten to quit. A third of all the nurses in this area are saying, look, we're going to quit. We are going to not. You know how catastrophic that would actually be for their entire healthcare industry? A third of all of their healthcare. I mean, they just don't care because clearly this is an at all costs agenda. It's a third, almost one third of all the nurses working in aged care say they would rather quit their jobs than be forced to have a COVID-19 injection. I mean, how do you ignore stuff like this? It's quite clear to me that the vast majority, or at the very least, the majority of healthcare workers, whether in the United States or elsewhere, are pushing back against this. Or let's just say specifically in the U.S., seeing how that's a third. But in the U.S., it's quite clear. We know that 60% of Marines have already turned this down. A third of the entire military has said no, because they have a pretty good idea what happens to them from the past. Same with healthcare workers. Same with people in minority communities. They're all very aware of how your government has continued to do this in very shifty ways throughout the past. And here we are in yet another example. Time to realize that you are the majority out there, and they're continually lying and gaslighting everybody they can. Which brings us over into the absurd discussion of guess what's back in the news? Mix and match vaccines, right? And let's start off with one that I thought I almost thought this was a joke or something like a spoof account. Like I was like, this can't be, this is so obvious. But you know what? So are all the other ones that I keep pointing out. Here's the CDC telling you, you can go ahead and get a COVID-19 injection and other injections, including the flu and shingles at the same visit. Except don't forget about the fact that the flu injection has been shown to increase other coronaviruses and other just infections by up to 36%. I didn't say COVID-19, but the military Pentagon study found very clearly, as we've shown more than once, that the flu injection is shown to increase coronaviruses in general and other infections up to 36%. So why in the world would you take it alongside other things like coronavirus? I mean, it just makes no sense. Except that they're just jamming these together for whatever reason they're trying to accomplish, whether that's money or something else nefarious. But remember that this is not something that's hard to prove. What they did by trying to debunk that was pretend that we were claiming it increased the risk of COVID-19. Now, I didn't say that, but isn't COVID-19 a coronavirus? Yes, it is. So I'll let you work that one out. But I said coronaviruses because that's exactly what the study cites. But here we are with them combining them. Now, that's not the main point. The main point is, are they testing these things next to each other to find out whether there's going to be cross-reactivity or problems? Well, you know the answer. It says you no longer need to wait 14 days between them. Side effects are the same if vaccines are given alone or together. Great, according to the CDC. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. That's not what the FDA says, according to the last update. As it says, very clearly, as I've shown you before, There is no information on the use of Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine with other vaccines. It's the same for Moderna. It's the same for the others. They have not tested this alongside other vaccines or, for that matter, other medications. I've shown you this more than once. So all those people out there taking other medications, they don't know whether it's going to cause some kind of reaction, and they'll blame it on something else. You'll never find out because they never tested for that, which is unsafe for your safety, though. That makes sense. Here we are for another example, vaccines, no information. So how can you justify this? And I understand the FDA makes clear that this is mandatory. Like, you cannot do these. They're very clear on both all the documents that have gone out about this. So as I said, I guess they did a massive safety trial testing all of these injections alongside each other between May 10th and today, because of course this is May 10th that this was last updated. Obviously, I'm being ridiculous because nobody's going to pretend that in less than a month or a little over a month that they managed to do a massive safety trial of all these different vaccines alongside the one and conclusively tell you that they're not dangerous next to each other, because you know what? That didn't happen. Or they're telling you just to take them together despite no evidence that it's safe, because that makes sense, right? Just like plenty of other untested vaccine combos, like the MMR vaccine, for instance. Those aren't tested alongside each other. So who cares? Just try them, see what happens, because you're the test subject. Realize how incredibly irresponsible this is. Now, I'm not saying that I'm telling you that the FDA, the entity that is supposed to be regulating this, that their updated information tells you this is the case, is the final straw on this. And the CDC is just going, just do it. Take them next to each other, because we're telling you that there's no side effects. But they don't know that because they haven't been tested. Do the research for yourself. Now, the point is, this is coming out all over the place all of a sudden, again, for like the third time, the mix and match vaccine discussion, despite the fact that I've shown you more than once, as you can watch in this show again, that I did back on January 3rd, 2021, UK vaccine mix and match. Like, they're actually arguing, let's just try one next to the other one because of supply issues, or because AstraZeneca is dangerous, but we're still giving it to people, but we're going to transition you over to Pfizer, but we're going to keep giving the one we're saying is dangerous while we do that for your safety. The point is that they're talking about this openly, again, right now. Medical experts back the combination. Well, their experts screamed about this when this happened. I've shown you the New York Post article. I've shown you directly from the sites. They came out and said, this is literally the most unscientific thing I've seen. This is them trying to guess their way out of a problem. That was a direct quote coming from their own expert, who is an expert on immunology and virology and all the different things we listed off. He's standing up and saying, this is crazy. There's no science behind this. And here we are mixing, guess what? A mod RNA injection, otherwise known as a modified RNA injection, which they're calling an mRNA injection, which is the Pfizer injection, alongside a completely different technology that has different cooling temperatures, that has different times between injections. But let's pretend like you could just mash them together because they both lead to the dangerous spike protein, which is good for you, but it's not really. This is what they're saying, that this is just okay though. Here's the one from Australia. Can you mix coronavirus, AstraZeneca, Pfizer vaccines? Should I get a second? They're going to tell you, yes, do it. Well, the danger is clear. And the experts that screamed about this just got shut up and they asked other ones, because that's called trusting the science. You know, finding the one that will say what you like and saying, he's the one, trust that one. It's just disgusting. But, you know, going back to the point that started it, realize that they're telling you right now to try these things alongside other things, even though they have not tested those things. Because it's safety, right? This is where we are. Now, on the other topic of DNA, this is one that, again, we've talked about more than once. And here we are again, June 19th, as of today, quote, technically no longer human, can mRNA vaccines meld with your DNA? Well, shocker, they tell you, no, it can't. Except that's completely false. And as they continue to do in this article, or I should say, based on the breadth of the science, it seems to be basically false. The point is that the science is what I'm telling you to look at, the breadth of the science. You look at it for yourself and you find clearly that they have shown you more than once that it seems obvious this is the case. My point is that here in this article, they say there's nothing to suggest that. There's no science. There's nothing anywhere that says that's the case, except you're going to look at about 7 articles in a row that say exactly that over the last so many months. Do you think that Cosmos just didn't know it was there, didn't care to look, or something else? Here's what it says. It's becoming increasingly common to see social media posts claiming that the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, which include those made by Pfizer and Moderna, could alter a person's DNA. Some posts even suggest that nanomachines are being injected into the body. Now, this is absurd. What's the right word for it? Not really a sidestep, but like, the way they're framing that is to kind of couch it over here with people randomly saying things on Twitter that don't understand the topic. Now, is it possible? Now, machines too. It's like they're intentionally trying to make it sound clumsy and clunky. People are saying nanobots. Right now, is that false? I have no proof to show you that there's in fact actual machines being injected into you, but is that possible? Of course it is. I've shown you more than once of the small, whether we're talking chips or not, the picture I showed you of the syringe with it inside the syringe tip. And this is stuff that's being utilized right now, whether it's being talked about in the vaccines or not. We show you the multiple different locations of injectable nanotechnology, nanoparticles, including biosensors that can, in fact, report outside your body, mesh with outside materials. This is all easily looked up. This is DARPA material been talked about for decades. So my point is, for them to disparage this like it's some ridiculous topic, that's the point. But all I'm talking about is nanotechnology. And in fact, not bots or not, nanoparticles are dangerous. And I'll show you that again, based on their own science. But of course, they want to start off like that to say, here are the fringe weirdos saying things that are very possible, but we want you to think are ridiculous. But it says, is there any truth to these rumors? Could an mRNA vaccine be modifying your DNA? Synthetically designed genetic photocopies of DNA known as messenger RNA or mRNA. Well, that's what they're saying that these are made from. Well, let's just start off by showing you that right out of the gate, they're incorrect or knowingly misleading you. Now, this is the document from Pfizer that came out right after their joke of a phase three trial, which only included 173 confirmed cases, of which 162 were observed in the placebo group and 8 were in the vaccine group. And 8 out of 162 is supposed to be a good representation of the entire country. Not at all, in fact. And how we're supposed to pretend 170 cases is what is supposed to be done in a phase three study. Guys, this is the obvious reality, but that's not the point today. And again, 95% effective. What they say down here is this release contains forward-looking information about Pfizer's efforts to combat COVID-19. The collaboration between BioNTech and Pfizer is to develop a potential COVID-19 vaccine, the BN-126 mRNA vaccine program, and the MODRNA candidate, which is, of course, the BNT162B2, which is the one being injected in everybody's bodies, which, of course, as we've learned, is actually a self-amplifying injection that they're keeping quiet from everybody. That's discussed in multiple scientific studies. And then, of course, mod RNA is not simply mRNA. This is mod RNA is modified RNA, which we've talked about. Here it is right here. A nucleoside modified messenger RNA, otherwise known as mod RNA, is a synthetic messenger RNA. So it's not natural mRNA that could be found in the body. No, this is modified, genetically modified RNA. So just recognize that's what's being put in people's bodies. So why is it that they don't say that? Why is it they keep that information from you and just simply say it's mRNA? But it's not, though. It's very specifically mod RNA, which Pfizer made sure to point out because it's not. But it goes on to say, in regard to the statement of 95% effective, understand, it simply says, this is, as it says, this release contains forward-looking information that involves, and it says that, where was it? I'll just read it again. The release contains forward-looking information about Pfizer's efforts to combat COVID-19, the collaboration between BioNTech and Pfizer to develop a COVID-19 vaccine. And it says that this and the candidate, that involves substantial risk and uncertainties, I guess it was Nathan to read, that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed or implied by such statements. Okay, that's great. So that's that quiet down there statement that says that 95% thing we said could be completely wrong and could change based on all sorts of things we have going forward, right? Involved in basically uncertainties that could cause the actual results we stated to be completely different. Great. Yes, this is what we've been citing ever since. But the point was mod RNA, just to show you right out of the gate, that there's a little bit of dishonesty happening across the board. Now it says, so why might people be concerned that this mRNA or mod RNA could somehow alter our DNA? In an AUSSMC excerpt reaction, Professor Neil McMillan from Griffith University suggests that a process of RNA being inserted into DNA, human DNA, does happen in the case of some other viruses. He says, quote, we know that certain viruses such as HIV are able to insert their RNA into human genome. It's interesting that HIV keeps coming up in these core combinations, isn't it? but only after they have converted it into DNA. This is accomplished via a virus enzyme called reverse transcriptase, an enzyme humans don't have. Okay. So he says, in other words, without the existence of the enzyme, there's no way for a similar thing to happen with the COVID-19 vaccine. Well, that's quite an assumption, isn't it? This is the sort of thing like saying, well, since usually these past vaccines have had an active viral component, and that means that's dangerous to pregnant women, since this new one doesn't have that, therefore they're safe for pregnant women. That's a ridiculous, there's no way you make that connection. You can argue that that part means that that won't happen, but what about all the other possible risks that we're ignoring? Right? To say that just because it doesn't have this one thing that makes HIV work this or work in this way, that then means it doesn't happen. That, I mean, maybe that's the case, but there's a lot of assumption happening here, which is exactly the point. It says, because the absence of that enzyme, it means it just can't happen. That's not true. And by the way, I'll show you the science that says otherwise. It says the upshot is we don't have a way for mRNA vaccines to be inserted into our genome. So currently vaccines are safe. Again, what? Okay, so just because there's no way for the mRNA to go into your genome, does that then automatically translate all these vaccines are safe? How is that even possible to state? What about the lipid nanoparticles? What about any number of other things that could be causing a problem? But nope, just because it doesn't enter DNA, therefore safe. That's some logical statement right there. But it says Professor Thomas Preece from Australian National University is also confident that these injections couldn't end up and spliced into your genome. Quote, he says, there is at present no evidence. There it is. Apparently no evidence, which I'll show you seven different pieces of evidence, that it's plausible for mRNA from the COVID-19 vaccines to be integrated into human DNA. At least not in the sense, and here's the caveat, in the sense that it would represent a significant medical problem with mRNA. Okay. So yeah, see, this statement, secondary statement, seems to suggest that it does happen, just not in a way that causes a problem. Okay. Well, there's no evidence for it, but not in the, at least not in the sense, well, right there, that means there is evidence, but in the sense opposite of what he's saying. That's how the human language works, guys. English language, human language, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious. At least not in the sense that this would, okay, so there is some. And that's, I'll show you next. Preece adds that even if by some rare chance a fragment of mRNA vaccine was able to split, so here you go again, yes, it does, impossible, into your DNA, it would most likely not be much of a problem anyway. Well, okay then, we're not discussing dangerous problem, we're discussing is it possible. He pretty much just admitted that in the article telling it's not possible. It says, quote, even if such events did rarely occur, it's the third time, the chances of it having a detrimental effect on the individual are extremely low. Okay, so then it means that there's a chance that it is extremely dangerous. Interesting. Quote, thus, this issue will likely be of negligible consequence to human health. But that means that there is a consequence, whether on the individual or population level, especially in contrast to very real harm done by the global pandemic. But again, there's an assumption based on something that's not really seeing global harm other than the actions being taken by the government. The statements of their information are showing you that this is the flu, a variation thereof, in regard to how serious it is based on their information. Now, their information could be wrong. My point is, based on what the people we're supposed to listen to are telling us, this is the flu. Infection fatality rate combination of 0.14%. Under 25 years old, according to an infection fatality rate meta-analysis of 113 studies on the infection fatality rate of COVID-19, finds that under 25 is 0.01%. That is the best compilation of all the science around that topic you're going to get. And I'll include it in the show notes if I should have grabbed it. I didn't think I was going to bring it up today. I'll grab it afterward. I'll write it down. I'm going to include that. I mean, I've shown it three times on the show, but the point is that's showing you that the harm is not as much as they want you to think it is. The harm is being done by the forced mask, the forced lockdown, the forced isolation, all the other things we're talking about, and then including all the other problems and saying it's COVID-19. McMillan and Preece both referenced a controversial paper, which we'll show you next, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, claiming that it was possible for COVID-19 mRNA to be implanted in human DNA. So didn't they just say there's no evidence? Like, do you realize how disjointed that is to be like, there's no evidence to suggest. And so here's some evidence that we disagree with. Okay, wait a minute. You just said there was no evidence. You didn't say just we don't agree with. However, neither expert felt the paper stood up to rigorous scientific scrutiny, except it very clearly did. And they even doubled down on it a second time. And that's right here. And we'll get to it in a second and read it for you. And you'll see for yourself how clearly interesting it is. Says, quote, the scientific consensus is that the work is preliminary, not proven. Yes, but this was back when it was in an RIX, is that what it's called? Is it MRX? You know, the non-peer-reviewed publication. Now it is, and it's something that they're continuing to pretend that it's not backed up by all the other things that have found the same thing. And it says, and likely an artifact of the experimental process rather than a real finding. Priest references two more papers from the American Society of Microbiology and the other, a non-peer-reviewed preprint, which independently tests the findings. So you say, well, this one over here is preliminary and not proved yet. So I'm going to prove that that's preliminary by another preliminary non-peer-reviewed study that finds these findings are not good. You can go ahead and laugh about that because that's stupid. Like, our peer non-peer-reviewed preprint is good, but yours isn't because it's not peer-reviewed yet. Rock and roll. Quote, there have now been at least two studies presenting evidence that the very detection technology used could be to blame, could be, for the generation of hybrid human viral sequences during this analysis rather than events that occurred. So they're using the could be. Two studies that present evidence that could be that shows that it might be wrong, not that it is wrong. Sure, I love that you'll take that possibility over the science that's showing their claims. But it says, and what about the implication that nanomachines, still nanomachines, I would love to see anybody anywhere using the term nanomachines. That's an overt attempt to make it sound clunky and clumsy. Or the claim that they're included in mRNA vaccines to artificially alter human DNA. Well, first of all, who is actually arguing that they're putting them in there to alter DNA? Like, they're just kind of clumsily meshing these things together. People are arguing they're putting those things in there for a lot of reasons. Well, I haven't seen one that's specifically saying to alter your DNA. They don't need nanobots to alter your DNA. They could do that with a lot of other things, including this injection. But it's just funny how they're trying to make it the way they want it to look. But it says, Priest says, it's all to do with a misunderstanding of the terms used to describe the size of tiny molecules included in vaccines. Well, you know what? This is exactly why I tried to dispel this way early on in this discussion. Remember when I brought this up and I said, okay, it's important to understand that there's a discussion of nanotechnology, which can include nanobots and machine, you know, things that are actually, you know, machines that can deliver drugs and so on. Or you can talk about nanoparticles, which could just be a very small particle of really any kind. Right. And this is what we know. And they are pretending like we don't know this. And, oh, they're confusing the term. No, we went over this a long time ago. And you guys know this. This is how they pretend we're that ignorant that we don't understand what we're talking about, even though this stuff is easy to look up. The reality is there's nanotechnology, and within that there are nanobots, but there's also nanoparticles that are included in the conversation of drug delivery, right? Lipid nanoparticles and so on. So there's a weird crossover here between drug delivering nanotechnology that could very easily be talking about nanobot technology or nanoparticle technology. And they know this, and this is becoming a very foggy, you know, where you don't really know which part they're in. But you can clearly look up right now, as I've shown you before, all the way down to the discussion of smart dust that was as early as 2004, the size of an eighth of a grain of salt that is, in fact, a machine that can work on the generation of your body's energy, and it can, in fact, broadcast, if you will, with outside your body from an outside location. I've gone over this more than once. This was an open symposium talking about this stuff in real time back in 2014? And he references back 10 years ago to 2004 and shows you the information. Just the motion of your body can keep these things moving. Now, my simple point in bringing that up is this is real world stuff as far back as a decade and more, you know, almost two decades ago. So why would we pretend that this is not something that's currently being discussed or utilized for the discussion of exactly what they're trying to accomplish? It's irresponsible to not talk about these things. So here they are using this as a way to say, oh, you crazy guys don't understand what you're talking about. Well, I think most of us are very clear on the difference at this point. They are the ones pretending we don't know. It says, quote, the origin of this concern as circulating on social media, again, as always, not some research-based concept, but no, just this Facebook post over here that's got three shares. That's where it all came from. Seems to have been in part a broader suspicion among nanotechnology, he says. However, in the mRNA vaccine context, the term nano simply refers to the tiny size of fat-like droplets that in the mRNA is encapsulated for delivery. He's talking about lipid nanoparticles, which, by the way, are dangerous. Polyethylene glycol working with these lipid nanoparticles are exactly the problem, and that's causing 70% potentially of the population to have anaphylactic reactions. James Lineweiler's pointed this out before it ever started happening, and they still don't care what he has to say. He's right, and he's been vindicated. They don't care. The point is, we're talking about nanoparticles. That's it. Whether small particles of other things or specifically the kind of things we're dealing with today, like magnetic nanoparticles that can work in the delivery of drugs, like this is what we're dealing with here. Yes, and that's dangerous. And yes, that could also include things that are exactly what we talked about, and we would never know that. Now, yes, do I have proof of that? No. But the reality is your government has tested on you, admitting to doing so more than we could count. So why would we not ask that question? It's people just like these guys here that dismiss these things out of hand because government said it's not true, that turn out to be the ones with, you know, mud on their face, that eat crow when it comes around that, oh, looks like they did do that. But it was for your safety, though. And these guys just march along, continuing to trust them because that's what they do. But here is the scientific research. Reverse transcribed SARS-CoV-2 RNA can integrate into the genome of cultured human cells and can be expressed in patient-derived tissues. Now, remember, we're talking about more than just the vaccine as a whole. The spike protein itself has shown to be specifically to be the problem here. I was just thinking for a second. Okay, I did include that. Just to make sure I have the nanoparticle part. I want to get to that as well. I see it right there. So reading off of this, and remember, this is the one they're dismissing, saying, no, that's fake news because they didn't do the proper whatever they're saying they didn't do. Read it for yourself. Look at their credentials and ask yourself and look at the actual process. Like, this is why I always tell you to read the entire thing. Unless I tell you that this is something that I've just gotten right out before the show or something I'm going to go back over, which I'll show you one next, which I will be going deep into in the future show. I read these things top to bottom because that's the only way you can understand this stuff. And in fact, when you're reading through these things and you come across something you don't understand, stop, look it up. I go down rabbit holes where I'm like on five different pages deep and I've realized, wait, was I doing it again? Oh, that's right. I'm back on this study. And I looked up a word, which brought me to a new study, you know, and you just end up learning things. That's how this should be working. That's what they don't want you to do. So read it. But the point was, understand how they come to these conclusions. It's really sound. It says, we investigated the possibility that SARS-CoV-2 RNAs can be reverse transcribed and integrated into the DNA of human cells in culture, and that transcription of the integrated sequences might account for some of the positive PCR tests seen in patients. In support of the hypothesis, we found that DNA copies of SARS-CoV-2 sequences can be integrated into the genome of infected human cells. Now, remember, we're talking about the spike protein specifically that the vaccine produces. That's why the comparison between, say, studies that find that SARS-CoV-2 can cause so-and-so, and they lead to the fact that, like, such as the Salk Institute, that the spike protein alone is what's causing these things, well, then it's an easy connection to make to the vaccine for the injection that produces that same spike protein and can cause those same problems. Now, it says, we also found in some patient-derived tissues evidence suggesting that a large fraction of the viral sequence is transcribed from integrated DNA copies of viral sequences generating viral host chimeric transcripts. Seems pretty clear to me. Now, they just dismissed this out of hand. I don't think I went any, I think I just kept it at the top. So jumping over to other ones. Now, I've already shown you this one. This is from, first of all, this is from May 25th, 2020. This next one is from May 6th, 2021. I understand, and this is the funny part. So they're saying this is like the one, and oh, but that one's being dismissed though, even though I don't see where they're arguing this is somehow dismissible or wrong, just because other people said, no, fake news. It's clearly, again, look at it for yourself. But the point is, going further back, May 6th, right? So how can on May 6th, it could be further evidence if that was the first one on May 26th? Well, the obvious reality is there's plenty more of this that they're pretending isn't there. Further evidence supports controversial claim that SARS-CoV-2 genes can integrate with human DNA. Now, again, we're talking about things like the spike protein specifically. Now, it says stem cell biologist Rudolf Janisch and gene regulation specialist Richard Young of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, you know, that classic anti-science fake news place, you know, who led the work, triggered a Twitter storm in December 2020 when their team first presented the idea in a preprint with BioRxiv. So this December 2020 is when this first went out. Then they doubled down and came back with the study and reconfirmed their findings and said, yes, this is clear. And they just don't care what it's, they don't like what it says. Here is one from June 11th, which we already talked about. Discovery identifies a highly efficient human reverse transcriptase that can write RNA sequences into DNA. So now we're talking about the mRNA, which is also in the injection, right? This is the messenger RNA that delivers the lipid nanoparticles encapsulating these instructions for the creation of the spike protein. So this is the stuff that is modified, genetically modified, not just mRNA, but mod RNA. Now it says, in a discovery that challenges long-held dogma in biology, researchers show that mammalian cells can convert that RNA sequence back into DNA, which is very, very telling. Now we're going to get to a discussion by the Dark Horse podcast, and they make a point to say that, look, if you find the lipid nanoparticles, if you find these things in certain parts of the body, that's the proof that the execution happened there, meaning the spike protein will be present. So if you're finding the RNA sequences, that shows you that this is the spike protein. All the things we're talking about are throughout your body, which we've already shown you, and we'll show you again in a second. But the bottom line in this current point is that them claiming that this is just not possible, right, that it's just not the case, seems to be pretty strongly countered by other scientific research saying the opposite. And we showed you this one as well. The Pol Zero reverse transcribes RNA and promotes RNA templated DNA repair. Pol Zero being a human polymerase helicase fusion protein, but it's a unique DNA in your body. It says we find that human Pol Zero reverse transcribes RNA. I mean, it's pretty damn simple, right? This is all out there. Right. If Ryan Christian here in his room can find this stuff and show you, so too them, they either know it, don't care, didn't even look, or are deceiving you for some reason. It's pretty damn obvious to show you that this is possible, that this is clearly possible with the cocktail of dangerous things they're injecting into your children, which could change your body forever, according to the science and the breadth of the science that we're showing you. Here's one we just talked about, Biomedical Journal of Scientific and Technical Research. mRNA, lipid nanolipid particles, and polyethylene glycol, or PEG, is a triad never used in clinical vaccines. This was published on February 22nd, 2021. So if it's never been used before, this is like combining, hey, take the flu, take this one together. Who knows what's going to happen, but we say it's safe, right? We don't know what the combination of these things could do in your body. And we're clearly finding out in real time. That's why more than 20% of the total VAERS reports are all in COVID-19. But we're pretending like that doesn't mean anything. In fact, it means everything. Here's what it says. None of the three components, mRNA, or specifically mod RNA, nanolipid particles, or polyethylene glycol, have been approved for vaccine or parental drugs. I've been reading that wrong. Parenteral. What is that actually? That's interesting. I've been reading that wrong. Administered or occurring elsewhere in the body than the mouth. Huh, that's interesting. See, exactly. Here's what you do, right? Find it. Don't be too proud to look something up and understand what it's talking about. It doesn't mean you're stupid because you don't know something, right? It means you're stupid when you don't look up, when you don't take the time to understand it. That's stupid. Plenty of things I don't know. Being an intelligent person is taking the time to find it out, to learn about it, to be humble enough to realize you don't know something. But the point is, I thought the last time I read that, I think it was relating to being pregnant. Anyway, the point was that these have not been approved for vaccines. How is that possible? How can they not approve these things when they're being, because we see how this has been going. It's under the emergency use authorization. That's why you find the inserts are blank. That's why you find certain ingredients in these things, like this stuff, has not been even verified to the UK in their safety process that they have up until 2022, 2023 to prove that. And they're being used on you right now. If they didn't have a state of emergency or the emergency authorization for these drugs under the guise of that emergency, they wouldn't be able to do any of this. But it's safe and effective, though. Well, if it's safe and effective, then why isn't it approved? This is a no-brainer, guys. But it goes on to say, research has shown that lipid nanoparticles easily enter the brain and can trigger immune reactions, especially after the second dose. More than 70% of the American population is allergic to polyethylene glycol, so the vaccines can cause allergic reactions and anaphylaxis. Oh, shocking. Exactly what we already know. There are well-founded suspicions that these vaccines can insert themselves into our DNA, causing mutations whose impact is unknown, and that could even be transferred to our offspring. We explain how the mRNA existing in our cell cytosol can enter the nucleus both during cell division, and at rest. In addition, the possible routes of integration of DNA and RNA in our chromosomes through reverse transcriptase are discussed, especially in sperm, where a specific endogenous RT has been identified. More science. Trust the science, right? I mean, it's just starting to get clownish. It's ridiculous. There is so much coming out that shows you, or at least challenges their stance, and they're just pretending it's not there. There's only so many experts you can continue to ignore, right? I mean, guys, these are coming from reputable institutions, colleges, right? I mean, and when I say that, I'm saying in their narrative, like, just, I'm not, like, understand that's always where I'm coming from. According to them, plenty of these places are considered reputable, right? And just the reality being that we should question everything, just like always, guys. That's always the overarching point for me. But going forward, here's another one. This is the one I was just looking at a little bit before we went live, but this is such an in-depth discussion that I really want to go through this. I mean, I might even make a whole show, but this is a really interesting study. But you want first to point out, this is coming from Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory at MIT, Cambridge, Massachusetts. You know, just continuing to show you that these are the kind of people that they would otherwise completely endorse if they were saying what they wanted them to say. This is coming from the International Journal of Vaccine Theory, Practice, and Research. Worse than the disease? Reviewing some possible unintended consequences of the mRNA vaccines against COVID-19. Right? Oh, and here you can just see them right here, by the way. Stephanie Sinoff, Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, Naturopath Oncology, Immersion Health, Portland, Oregon. Now it says, the exceptionally rapid movement of these vaccines through controlled trials and into mass development raises multiple safety concerns. Exactly. It says, we then review both components of the intended biological response to these vaccines, including production of the spike protein itself and their potential relationship to a wide range of both acute and long-term induced pathologies, such as blood disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and autoimmune diseases, all of which we've seen through the roof. Among these potential induced pathologies, we discussed the relevance of prion protein-related amino acid sequences within the spike protein, right? Nobody seems to be talking about that. The prions, the connection to that, to the vaccine, which that major study we just discussed was pointing out. We also present a brief review of studies supporting the potential for spike protein shedding. Transmission of the protein from We also present a brief review of studies supporting potential for spike protein shedding, transmission of the protein from a vaccinated to an unvaccinated person, resulting in symptoms induced in the latter. We finish by addressing a common point of debate, namely whether or not these vaccines could modify the DNA of those receiving the vaccination. While there are no studies demonstrating definitively that this is happening, We provide a plausible scenario supported by previously established pathways for transformation and transport of genetic material, whereby injected mRNA could ultimately be incorporated into the germ cell DNA for transgenerational transmission. We conclude that with our recommendations regarding surveillance that will help to clarify long-term effects of these experimental drugs, and allow us to better assess the true risk-benefit ratio of these novel technologies. Right. So when they say that that's not definitively been proven, yeah, you could agree with that, because even these studies will tell you we're not definitively proving this, but it seems pretty clear that this stuff is happening or can happen based on our scientific research. And here we are, them over here going, there's no evidence of that. There's nothing happening. We don't even see any evidence of it. There's no one saying this, but here are the other six articles saying exactly that, right? Well, finally, not necessarily the injection itself, but what's within it. I've shown you this I'll go ahead and show you right now. Here's the entire discussion. Here's the actual title, Biochemical Functionality of Magnetic Particles as Nanosensors, from May 31st, 2019. How far away are we to implement them into clinical practice? Which is ridiculous because they were already doing it at that time, which I've shown you in the past. So it's always how they frame these things. But this is a clip called The Unacknowledged Danger of Nanoparticles from June 8th, 2021. A great clip from Brock West for TLAV. But just to read you the main part today, I really hope you watch it entirely, because there's alarming stuff that they find in regard to the risk, in this case of specifically magnetic nanoparticles, but in this discussion, specifically just nanoparticles. Now, remember, that doesn't always mean machines. It just means nano-sized particles that are utilizing in these injections. And as it says, nanoparticles, in general, once present in the body, may trigger various systems. And it goes on to show you all sorts of things that are quite alarming. But the main point for the discussion today is the reproductive system is another target of nanoparticles with possible detrimental effects. This is their research, by the way. Upon an in vivo applications, nanoparticles may accumulate in reproductive organs. Oh, weird. Where they have direct effects on germ cells with reduced cell count or activity in both female and male germ cells. Furthermore, nanoparticles, such as lipid nanoparticles, are able to alter or damage DNA in cells, right? So they know this. That's a definitive statement, and you can read this information for yourself. You can read what they cite to, and they're clearly telling you nanoparticles, not maybe, but are able to. So they maybe not happen in everybody's body, but they're injecting you with nanoparticles, specifically lipid nanoparticles with PEG, which causes more problems, into your body. And they're telling you they can alter your DNA or damage it, period. Which, it says, would be especially problematic in germ cells. In a recent in vitro study, uptake of coded spions, which we talked about before, in granulosa cells was tested. It found that depending on the coding, no or only low uptake of toxic spions was observed. Now, the point is simply telling you that nanoparticles are able to alter or damage your DNA. That seems pretty clear to me. And by the way, it's the truth. And I've shown you more than once. Now, by the way, just happened to have this off to the side. Let's not forget that according to the Pfizer documentation, remember that you can see right here, this is the Pfizer biotech, okay? They found in their leaked study that they weren't even going to probably show anybody, I would argue. There we go. Jeez. Freezing on me like always. Is the fact that they find quite clearly that this builds up in your ovaries. As well as, you know, and the ovaries was one of the highest. The spleen was outrageous. Which has other implications I won't get into today, which we talked about in past shows, but it shows you this, that it builds up. Now, we also had the other study, which I won't grab today, which showed you that the rats that they tested this on, the females had a decrease of almost 10% in reproductivity. That was on their documentation. And they argue we didn't have to report that because it was less than 75% total. It's like, oh, great. Who made that metric up? Don't you think you have a right to know this could potentially decrease your reproductivity by 10%? Or that it collects in your ovaries and your spleen? Well, they don't care about informed consent, like the study we've shown you more than once that says that it has the possible cause of antibody-dependent enhancement. And they were supposed to tell you that, and they didn't. That was December 2020. Well, watch this for yourself and realize that the risk of this stuff, whether it's the injection itself, whether it's the mod RNA, whether it's the spike protein it delivers, whether it's the nanotechnology that encapsulates it. All of these pieces individually have been shown by their own science to be dangerous for you. And yet we're the crazy ones for simply pointing that out and asking you to think for yourself. I mean, I think this is a pretty obvious reality that we're completely destroying right now. But now bringing this over onto the Dark Horse podcast. Now, I'm going to watch a little bit of this, maybe probably not the whole thing. It's 11 minutes, but this is the one that got censored in a lot of ways. And this, I think, is the clip, a part of it that got censored. But you should watch, you should listen to these people. They're experts. Robert Malone being the one that we pointed out before. Here's his LinkedIn page. He's one of the creators of mRNA vaccines specifically, saying the current genetic vaccines, all of them, did not undergo the time-tested assessments of dose ranging and dose timing clinical studies. He has direct first-person report of how the dose was selected, confidential source, and it was basically a swag by committee, which is literally the opposite of what they should be doing. He says, current mRNA vaccine selected a dose that was too high. The spike protein is the actual active agent in terms of eliciting immune response, which we should know. I know of no data wherein the mean, median, range, etc. of total amounts of spike protein produced in a patient after administration has been defined. Like this is like one of the main experts we should listen to in regard to mRNA vaccines. And he's telling you everything we're saying. They don't care because they're hiding this from you. Now let's watch this. We'll go through it a little bit here and see how far we get. We're looking good on time. So let's go through this. It's a great podcast, by the way, which I recommend you take a listen to more than just today. Let's see. Was this the one?
Byram Brittle,
yes,
did a freedom of action request of the Japanese government for the Pfizer.
All right. I'm just going to play it. Uh-oh. Great. Jeez. Okay, I'm just going to play it on the screen, seeing as how StreamYard just doesn't ever want to work for me. So let's just play it on here. Hopefully it's loud enough.
Brittle did a freedom of action request of the Japanese government for the Pfizer data, and he got a biodistribution chart. And I'm pretty sure I linked to the original data in my paper. And this graph was created from that Pfizer data. So this is not the Pfizer data itself from the Pfizer study. This is a graph, and people have double checked and triple checked this.
Yeah, it's a summary graphic.
It's a summary graph so that you can see it visually.
I did review the primary data, and I concur that the primary data is consistent with the graph that you have nicely summarized. To the listener, how it shows that?
How it shows what?
Yeah, some people will just listen to this. So what we're looking at is a graph of different lines of concentration of this spike protein in various tissues?
Yes, it's a lipid nanoparticle.
Oh, it's the lipid nanoparticle, which is the delivery mechanism.
Right. It's like
the drug.
Well, for it's people the, at it's home, the, it's the box. It's the box in which
it's
the
right.
mRNA
for the drug. So the mRNA right. is what causes the manufacture of the spike protein. But if you find the lipid nanoparticles, that tells you that your drug got to this location.
Right. It's the delivery box, effectively. It's the FedEx delivery box that has the mRNA inside.
This is, you're exactly right. This is the lipid component.
Yeah.
Right. That does the delivery. Okay, so good. So what we've got here are different lines that tell you over time, from a quarter of an hour to 48 hours, where you find what the concentration in various tissues are. And you've got some strong signals here. You've got it in whole blood, not surprisingly, over the first 4 hours. In other words, it's moving around. It's sort of-
so think about, so 4 hours. The argument is supposed to stay in your arm, right? 4 hours, according to their own data, it's all in your blood. I mean, think about how ridiculous that is. How is it possible that Pfizer's own information can very clearly show you that it's in your blood, right? The spike protein, the nanoparticles are in your blood and circulating in your body. Their data shows that. And yet, right this moment, you will have half the independent media, all of the mainstream media, and your government screaming at you that that's not true. But this is why we say COVID clown world. Like, we are living in a complete, like, inverse reality where we are staring at the information from their documents and we are called crazy for pointing out what they're saying because the media said that's not the truth. God darn it. YouTube just hates me and I love it. It's only when I'm on my Brave browser because this is where I sign in. And you'll notice that even on the chat, if I bring up our video from today, I mean, it's just for fun. No, I don't. Let's see. I don't have it open. It doesn't matter. The point is that they constantly knock off the chat. I can't use anything. I try to access things. They're really childish and petty. Like, they've targeted me as someone they don't like, and rightly so, because I'm picking them apart left and right. I'm making them look like fools. So here's what they do. Keep going, YouTube. You just make yourself look stupid. So let's keep trying.
Protein, but if you find the lipid nanoparticle.
Well, for people at home, it's the
causes the manufacture of the spike protein. But if you find the lipid nanoparticles, that tells you that your drug got to this location.
Right.
There it is.
It's the delivery box, effectively. It's the FedEx delivery box that has the mRNA inside.
This is, you're exactly right. This is,
you know, real quick on a funny point. It reminds me of what James Corbett said about how, you know, or really what I've been saying the entire time that I recognized in Corbett saying, I'm glad seeing more people say it, is that YouTube broke itself, right? You're broken. That's what I keep saying. Hashtag YouTube broken. The point is that they are willing to break themselves to stop what we are doing. Think about that. Like, right. Wouldn't you think that making the video wig out like that in the middle of a show would be bad press for YouTube, right? Like, look at how broken they are. Like, you can't even watch a video without it airing and saying error occurred, right? They're doing that. They are sacrificing their own model. Now, I'm not even saying, like, who knows, that could have just been a random glitch, but we know that they're censoring people, that they're breaking their algorithms to censor truthful information, and they're willing to break themselves to stop what we are doing. Think about how important that makes what you're doing out there, that they're willing to sacrifice their own everything that they are to stop you because they're scared of you. I just love that, right? You should be proud of that.
This is the lipid component.
Yeah.
All right, that does the delivery. Okay, so good. So what we've got here are different lines that tell you over time, from a quarter of an hour to 48 hours, where you find what the concentration in various tissues are. And you've got some strong signals here. You've got it in whole blood, not surprisingly, over the first 4 hours. In other words, it's moving around, it's circulating.
That in and of itself is unusual.
And right.
It should be in the It wasn't. So forgive me, just to get a little more precise, we've administered by needle into the deltoid of this complex.
Yeah.
And you're just tracking the lipid part of it now. There's also an RNA part of it. But as you say, it quickly moves into the blood. Plasma is the cell-free fraction. That's the yellow mustard line. And the gray line is whole blood. So that includes the cellular part of blood.
Yeah. Hmm.
Okay. Carry on.
Okay. And then we get lines that rise. So all of these things decline as basically this diffuses through the body, which actually is not what you would hope. You would hope it would stay in the arm, but it's basically diffusing through the body. So concentrations are dropping as it gets more and more evenly distributed. And then concentrations are rising conspicuously in two places as we close in on 48 hours. One of them is in the ovaries, where it goes sky high.
Exactly.
That's really frightening.
Anybody that's looked at this data says, what?
Yeah, that is a very
yes,
frightening
and,
signal.
And it's the cognitive dissonance between what the CDC says is that this is safe for pregnant women.
Right, right.
This is perfectly safe, and it's on the CDC website. It's unbelievable.
It's at some level, it's not safe for women at all.
Right, and you know the craziest part about this, guys, is you know you could disagree with these people, but they're experts, right? I mean, these aren't just a bunch of fringe weirdos in their basement. These are literally experts, and you know, doctors, scientists. Like these are the kind of people that have the ability, because of the work they've put in throughout their life, to speak on these things. Really, anybody has the, you know, it's your free speech. But the point is that to speak on them and hold water. You know, these are people that have a right to have an expert opinion on these things. Doesn't always mean they're right. But we're at a point today where these people stating these things while pointing to scientific documents from Pfizer and the research that backs up those points are being called crazy. Like, that is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. We are living in an inverse reality. And it's, I mean, talk about the post-truth world they keep trying to push. Like, that's exactly what they've created. I'm just happy to be able to be sane enough to see that we're, you know, on the, you know, the side of it that makes sense here. At the very least, the objective side. Not where I'm standing over here going, we're right. I'm standing over here going, nobody really knows, and you guys are clearly lying to us. Now, sure, there are things that I believe I know pretty clearly, but I'm willing to question because that's what an objective person would do. It's amazing that these people can stand here and tell you the truth and they're anti-science, fake news, conspiracy theorists.
I mean, this is
right.
Before we interpret the data, let's make sure your listeners understand it.
Okay. So the ovaries show a high concentration.
He's
for
a
whatever
teacher.
Reason, it's ending up in the ovaries
of
preferentially.
The
yes. The lipid is ending up there. And then the other place that we have a signal, which I think suggests something we need to worry farther down the road. You tell me, Robert, if I'm on the right track here or not. But the fact that it shows up concentrating in bone marrow.
Bad news.
Actually, that suggests that you could end up with, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I'm saying we need to look for something like leukemias showing up here.
Long-term stuff.
Creation in bone marrow. I know from other work that it also seems to show up preferentially in lymph nodes, which raises the question of whether or not lymphomas might be created. In any case, these are possible long-term effects that we have no way of knowing don't arise because these things have not been injected into people for more than a year.
So we have two adverse event signals that are starting to become apparent, my friends at the FDA tell me.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, note that the timeline, like they pointed out in the beginning, but I think it's important to recognize we're talking 48 hours. Like that is so important to recognize as they're talking about the timelines here, you know, the adverse reactions within 4 hours, really in 2 hours, this thing has peaked through your blood plasma, through your whole blood, right? And then about 8 hours, it starts to increase through your ovaries and your bone marrow. And after 48 hours, it has seemingly, who knows if it's even spiked, but it's rapidly increased by 48 hours. That means that the spike protein, all this stuff is all the way throughout your body, which by the way, we've already proven on the show with the scientific research that that's the case. And yet, as they point out, the CDC is saying, no, you're safe. It's all safe and effective. The entire media continues to parrot that. I mean, this is sinister. Like, there's no other way to look at it when you have it this clear in front of you.
Okay. That are relevant to what you're saying. Okay. You're focusing on bone marrow. Mm-hmm. So typically aplastic anemia, leukemia, lymphoma, those kinds of things might, if there are, is going to be a signal. We might see it 6 months, 3 years, 9 years.
Jeez.
Okay. Hard to tell.
Nine years.
This is a progression of cancer.
Do you really think that if 9 years from now we saw just an onslaught of exactly what they predicted, like exactly, that they would even admit it? I mean, like, I don't even care if it tied exactly, like if it was like specifically tied to like lipid nanoparticles and you could prove that, they would still like, oh no, it wasn't this. You know, they would still argue based simply on the distance that it wasn't connected to these injections. But think about how crazy that is. This is a genetically modified thing that is going to be causing potentially problems for, and this is why people like Cahill and others are telling you that we are going to see an increased issue from this as time goes forward. And the further away we get from it, the less they're going to associate it. I mean, look at what they're doing right now. They are in your face, ignoring the real data that you can look at right now online and saying that's fake news. Imagine what they can do once we're 9 years out.
It often requires multiple mutations.
Yep.
Okay. So let's just park that.
Yep.
It is a risk that should be monitored.
Well, wait a second. Well, you said somebody is beginning to see a signal of something, but I didn't get what it was.
Yeah. So I was going to get into that.
Okay.
there's two signals that are.
And by the way, he's talking about the FDA. Like, this is the guy we just referenced, Malone. He has insight. He works. This is his industry, right? He's an inventor of this. He knows, like, at least as he states, confidential sources. So he's saying people inside the FDA have warned him about this stuff. If that's possible, why are we not hearing about it? It shows you how captured these agencies are.
Starting to, and we don't have time to go into the nuance of how come it takes so long for them to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay. But one of them is thrombocytopenia.
Yep.
That's not having the platelets.
Okay.
Okay.
Which are manufactured in the bone marrow.
That's an important point.
Focusing on bone marrow signals, okay? Thrombocytopenia is one of them. Another one that is very hard to understand that's starting to come up in the database is reactivation of latent viruses.
Ah.
Okay, so this is shingles. Shingles is an example of that, but there are many others, and there's something in the literature about reactivation of latent human retroviruses. Okay, so it is there are anomalous findings cropping up, and I concur that when I received these data to evaluate.
I just want to go ahead and say Dark Horse Podcast is fantastic, and I hope they're okay with me playing. I really didn't plan to play. This is just a great piece. It really is. And I've watched this before. It's just like you can't, it's so interesting how they describe this stuff in a very, very sound, concise way. And it's just important. I just want to say that I'm pausing it for that purpose. You know, not like I'm worried about copyright strikes or anything. Who cares about YouTube? But I just don't want to insult Dark Horse Podcast. I want them to know that it's not, you know, it's about helping them spread their work, right? And showing you that these are things that we've already been talking about for a long time. And that it's great to see these experts confirming this stuff, right? Because I'm not a scientist, right? So this is powerful stuff.
Cropping up, and I concur that it was when I received these data to evaluate. I gave you that whole story. Okay, those are two of the things. And by the way, what's really odd to me about the ovarian signal is there's no signal in the testis.
Right. It's very low.
And a colleague of mine,
that's strange.
Dr. Kevin Tamara, has done a lot of thinking and reading about that because it bothers him too. He's a urologist, so he kind of specializes in the male reproductive system. And he has some theories having to do with charge associated, because these are charged lipids.
Exactly. Exactly, right? This is my point, guys. These are magnetic nanoparticles, right? I just read you the problems, right? This is stuff they've been working on for a long time. Now, I don't know why we can't like the idea of even this discussion of magnetic stuff. I mean, it's just like, who knows? But the reality is there's an obvious possible connection there. And it's really telling that they just dismissed this stuff. There's a lot around what's going on inside this injection that they're just keeping from your view. And these experts are talking about it openly, right? It's triggering latent retroviruses or herpes and these different things we've already talked about. There is a mountain of evidence around this. The media, who tries to pretend like the journalists working for you, are just actively stepping around this stuff. Like, they are purposefully, you know, look at what we keep seeing on Veritas, whatever else. These people know what they're supposed to ignore. Look at the people that, as I understand it, Allison Morrow just interviewed somebody else. There's another defector from the mainstream media. It's happened all over the place because they know they're being stifled. They see the dying industry that they're living in, right? This is the future. And right now, understand, that also means that they're trying to co-opt this as well. That's why we have these fake independent outlets trying to jump in there and take over new things, breaking stories we've talked about 7 months ago, right? Don't fall for it.
Particular features of the ovary that may, and as opposed to the testis, that may explain some of this, but it doesn't get us away from the two core things. Number one, this was known with the original data packages. The Japanese data package is essentially a historic document. It's different from what the FDA is currently looking at. So these data have been out there a long time. And yes, we have a whole lot of messages.
But not in public view.
Within the purview, the confidential.
Of the regulators.
Protected.
This is company confidential.
Of the regulators across the world.
But not okay. This
meaning like the FDA and the rest of them, they've had this in front of them from the beginning and they just didn't tell you. That's the point.
So this messaging that
company confidential.
Good, so let's nothing not to worry lost. About. Yeah. That messaging was inconsistent with these signals that were apparent, at least inside of
the regulators knew.
The data
about.
Or the data.
Yeah. Okay. So
they know.
We've got potential long-term, we've got short-term implications in the bone marrow. We've got potential long-term implications in the bone marrow. We have short-term implications in the ovaries. We've got potential long-term implications. I would add to the list what I've been worried about most from the beginning are autoimmune disorders
right.
that might show up in the lung.
Exactly.
Is that plausible as you say?
We talked about this earlier. And for me, it's less the lipid component, although that certainly has merit
yeah.
for autoimmune. It's more the circulating free spike protein,
yes.
which we didn't expect.
Right.
And in the literature, and we were the developers assured us this would not happen. The literature suggested we would not have free spike.
Yep.
And then Harvard and Brigham did a study in nurses, and lo and behold, we clearly have free spike after vaccination.
Yeah.
And that has a whole other set of implications, but autoimmune. Development of autoimmune disease against complexes of foreign protein plus normal human proteins is certainly something that you'd have to monitor for.
Yep.
As we were discussing, the way that that's part of the reason why you typically want a 2 to 3 year follow-up period on the initial group of phase 3 patients to make sure that autoimmune consequences don't develop because they typically take time.
Right. And this is why, you know, they always say that there's no such thing as a vaccine that is developed fast. You know, but like the fastest we've ever developed a vaccine has been like what, like 7 years or.
And this is why I often point out the sidestep, like the very clearly dishonest claim that it's because we've done this before. Nothing you've done before, technologically speaking, increases the speed of safety trials. If that was the case, then every time they make a new vaccine based on the same old vaccine technology, they would jump it out in a couple of weeks. No, they spend years studying it because it's something different. In this case, they're claiming we've been working on mRNA technology for a decade. Okay, what does that have any how does that have any relevance on how quickly you safety test this new thing? It doesn't. But that's how they sidestep it. And all the mindless followers on Twitter will scream at you and say, they've been working on it for decades. Well, they sure skipped through the safety trials, though. Doesn't make any sense to say technology was going on for a long time before this.
Yeah, probably. Unless we go back mid-century when things were loose and fast.
Right, but there's a reason for that. It's not just that, okay, well, we didn't have the technology. We have better technology now. We still need to be able to see what the long-term effects is on a 12-year-old.
Time. And in fact, usually you use animal models to do that, and the assumptions on which the animal models bring these things to light are faulty.
Right, and how do you judge the effect on a 12-year-old?
What the animal models give us is a signal that alerts us to things that we need to follow up on carefully in humans.
And that's why we jumped past that, which we all know in the beginning of this, and then they followed back up after the fact, but it was already being injected in people's arms. And we're seeing the result of that.
Okay, so hold on. So just to make this segment clear, okay, we've got very alarming short-term stuff. We've got short-term stuff that is alarming on the basis of where we find these lipids.
All based on Pfizer's own information.
Where we find the spike proteins, those things are reasons for concern because it wasn't supposed to be this way. We've also got an alarming signal in terms of the hazards and deaths or the harms and the deaths that are reported in the system. And there's a reason to think that those are dramatic underreports.
Yes, and they're all okay. Consistent all right, with the spike distribution.
Two parts of the harm equation. Okay, the harm equation involves there appears to be short-term harm being done at an alarming level. Long-term harm is quite plausible based on what we already know about what's taking place, but we of course are going to take time to figure out whether it's actually
find out, and then it's going to be too late. You can right. never vaccinate yourself, but you can never unvaccinate.
Right, and so these people, do they seem like anti-science fringe basement dwellers? You know, I know I'm beating that point to death, but the point is, guys, we need to realize how obviously they're just dismissing anybody with the argument as something ridiculous. These people are far, 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 far more educated than anybody in the mainstream media. The Don Lemons, the reliable sources, and their, you know, Brian Stelters, and these people out there that are trying to convince you that you're dumb and ignorant and dangerous if you listen to these people. That's the scary part. That's the medical misinformation. Again, here is the article on April 26, 2021, where I go, this was the first one, by the way. There's a bunch of follow-ups to this, and there's plenty more I added after this. But just to start off, as I said back then, the spike protein in COVID vaccines is putting you at serious risk, according to the science. April 26th. Yet again, right? This is even just now still coming up and bubbling through the independent media. It's time to start paying attention, everybody. Everybody out there. Here is Dr. Bridal, who we've played before. Take a listen to what he has to say, and we'll jump over to some more things. And we'll see, where are we? We're looking good. I mean, we're past 2 hours, but we'll be good.
So my name is Byram.
Let me make sure I have, let's see if I got this one. I believe I do. Now, Byram is somebody who we've talked about in the past. We just referenced something from him the other day. Now these are, you know, more and more of these people, these experts are coming out and they're just destroying this narrative right now across the board. And it's amazing to me how many of these people are being dismissed outright, just completely ridiculous, fake news, conspiracy theorists. Now this is freezing on me. God, it's so strange. Try it again.
So my name is Byram.
There we go. Byram Bridal, I believe it's Bridal. He'll say it here in a second. Let's take a listen. Now, it's important to listen to what he has to say, because he is talking about the exact same stuff that we're trying to get convey to you, and it's just one more expert to listen to. Let's take a listen.
Byram, and I am an associate professor of viral immunology at the University of Guelph. And since the pandemic was declared, I have been trying to serve as a voice of objective scientific opinion. I am a publicly funded servant. So I'm a public servant. You pay for me, Canadians, from your tax dollars.
Come on.
I work at an academic institution, which is publicly funded. And therefore, I see it as my responsibility to Canadians. When I was asked if I'm concerned or if I saw potential for a link between heart inflammation and the COVID-19 vaccines, I said I did. And this is why. What we have learned, And we've learned this from a large body of scientific literature. We've also learned this from reports that were submitted by Pfizer themselves to regulatory agencies, one in particular to a regulatory agency in Japan. And what we have learned is, I'm very familiar with vaccines, and traditional vaccine technology would tell us that when you put a vaccine into the shoulder, and that's where we get vaccinated with the COVID-19 vaccines, traditional vaccine technology tells us the vaccine would stay on the shoulder. And then what would happen is cells from the immune system would come and pick up the spike protein. All these vaccines get our bodies to manufacture the spike protein, right? So cells of the immune system pick up that spike protein, take it to the local draining lymph node, and activate the immune system. And so what we have found is that this assumption about the vaccine remaining in the shoulder does not apply to this novel vaccine technology. It's never been in people before. These messenger RNA vaccines get distributed throughout the whole body. What we have found, in fact, is that as little as 25% of the dose remains in the shoulder, and it traffics all over the body. Also, many of you might have heard of polyethylene glycol, because that is one of the components of the vaccine that sometimes people develop anaphylactic shock to. That polyethylene glycol, just so that you know, is designed to help facilitate that spread throughout the body. You get about five-fold greater spread throughout the body with the polyethylene glycol there. Do you know why? Because when the polyethylene glycol is there, it actually helps the lipid nanoparticles bypass the very cells of our immune system that are supposed to pick up the antigen and take it to our lymph nodes.
Very telling, as always. Again, I apologize for why that seemingly just cannot play for you, but as always, the clip will be in the show notes for you to watch for yourself. But very important discussion from another doctor telling you how serious this is, telling you everything else we've been telling you based on the scientific research for a long time going forward. Here is Tessa pointing out why. I caught it that time. I almost went forward without realizing we weren't showing you. Tessa, why isn't this Red Cross tweet labeled as misinformation? Well, I think you already know the answer to that before we even read what it says. But remember, we just showed you the experts telling you that's the case. Well, here's American Red Cross as of the first of this month. We don't label blood products as containing vaccinated or unvaccinated blood, as the COVID-19 vaccine does not enter the bloodstream. No, look at that. Well, literally, that's challenged by all of the science that's done around this, but who cares? Because Red Cross is on the side of the narrative. It says, and poses no safety risk to the recipient. Also false. If you have safety concerns about potential blood transfusions, please speak with your medical care team. Now, the American Red Cross is not in the business of understanding how these vaccines work. They're just parroting the narrative, right? But here is the abstract, and we'll just actually show you the study itself, but she rightly includes this. And actually, as fantastic as it is, and thank you, Tessa, for being outstanding, actually includes the link, which seemingly nobody wants to do on Twitter anymore, because my tweet is the point to look at, right? Come to my Twitter account. No, it's not about the information. It's about me being promoted, right? That's what a lot of people do today. Share the link, guys. If you're sharing a document or you're sharing something, don't just share a screenshot. Share the link like Tessa, because that's about the information and not about yourself, right? But here is the actual study. Thank you, Tessa, for being outstanding. Clinical infectious diseases, Oxford Academic. Circulating SARS-CoV-2 vaccine antigen detected in the plasma of the vaccine recipients of the Moderna injection. 11 of 13 participants showed detectable levels of SARS-CoV-2 protein as early as day one after vaccine injection. Okay, so 11 of 13 of them in this study from Oxford Academic, that classically anti-science place, he's saying that it's in the blood within one day. The graph we showed you with Dark Horse podcast and the experts, one of which is the creator of the mRNA vaccines, are telling you that it's in the blood, as Pfizer's documentation that they don't want you to see also shows you. So how do we explain that? Because there's a narrative that they're all trusting. Some of them know they're lying and don't care. Some of them know they're lying because there's a bigger agenda. Some of them are just stupid. But to her point, why isn't that considered misinformation? It is misinformation. That's literally what medical misinformation looks like, because we're trusting the science, right? There it is. It's just staggering. And I've shown you many, many more that show you it's in the blood. This is just one of the main ones. Well, as yet another thing showing you the reality versus the narrative. Right now, it's very obvious. It's whether you're just blindly trusting what the media tells you versus what's actually going on. Well, there's something else happening too. Oh no, the same thing we see with every vaccine we seem to deal with, or, you know, swine flu, H1N1, all these different discussions. What have they commonly led to? Guillain-Barré syndrome. This is now being reported after COVID vaccination. What isn't seemingly being reported that they're ignoring because fake news, right? Well, Swiss Policy Research, always doing a fantastic, honest job, objective. Guillain-Barré syndrome is an autoimmune neurological disease that causes muscle weakness and paralysis, usually starting in the feet and hands. About 20% of people still unable to walk at 6 months, and a global fatality rate of about 5%. That's a lot. Back in 1976, a few hundred cases of Guillain-Barré triggered a stop of the U.S. Warp Speed swine flu vaccination campaign. Wait a minute. I read that a moment ago, but is that actually what it was called? I think that's just a reference to today, isn't it? I didn't pick up on that last time. It doesn't look like, so that's referencing today's 2020 warp speed. Yeah, I'm thinking they're just referencing, like, you know, and using it as an analogy. I got to look, I got to follow up on that. That would be crazy. That would be really, if it was actually called warp speed. Anyway, the point was, in 1976, that was the one I was referencing. That's the clip I played in the beginning of the show. Swine flu vaccination campaign based on zero cases that they pushed and that caused all sorts of neurological diseases that, in fact, their own documentation said would possibly happen, that they hid from people. And that's why they switched it out at the last minute. Now, this is the clip they're referencing that I just played for you, showing you exactly what I just told you. Now, it says early reports of Guillain-Barré after the COVID vaccinations were first ignored. Of course they were. Because they say, well, that's not connected. It could be just natural, so we'll ignore it. And then described as extremely rare, but not possible because we're going to ignore it. However, a quick search of publicly available case reports indicates that in the U.S. alone, there may already be dozens, even hundreds of confirmed cases of post-vaccination Guillain-Barré syndrome, both after mRNA and adeno-vector vaccines. As with other serious vaccine adverse events, Guillain-Barré may affect young and healthy people at low risk of serious COVID or at all risk, any risk at all, I should say. The case of a Nashville mother of three was recently covered by a local TV station. Both health authorities and people at low risk of severe COVID may want to carefully examine the evidence. It's just one more thing that is being reported. Update on June 10th, 9 days ago, the German Paul Ehrlich Institute confirmed that Guillain-Barré occurred, quote, at an increased rate after AstraZeneca vaccinations and might constitute a new risk signal. Note that Guillain-Barré most certainly isn't limited to AstraZeneca, which isn't even used in the United States, despite there being reports in the United States, one of which being Nashville. But just to add to it, this is what we keep telling you, right? Not only has it been discussed, it is being confirmed by other locations, other independent regulatory agencies of other countries. So is it being talked about? Is your government telling you what's going on? Is it being added to informed consent documents? No, of course not, because it's not confirmed and we don't know. So usually when it's not confirmed and we don't know, that's when things get paused for safety. Not now, though, not in the COVID clown world. It just keeps going. Here's the British Medical Journal on top of that, also confirming for you that Guillain-Barré syndrome following a first dose of a chimpanzee adenovirus vectored COVID-19 vaccine. So it even showed up in their trials, in their studies. They didn't care. They hid it from your view. That's why it's being discussed quietly in the corner and nobody knows what's going on. Well, on top of that, hundreds of vaccinated Indonesian health workers get COVID-19. So even if you get the injection, not only do you risk the problems that we're telling you, but it doesn't even stop what they're telling you it's supposed to stop. As they keep screaming that it stops transmission. Well, no, it doesn't. And what they actually are saying is that what's the terminology they use? Not stops transmission, but in fact, I can't even think of it right now. The point is they keep saying, implying by their terminology that this thing stops transmission, even though the evidence of real world shows that's wildly incorrect. And I've shown you all the way back before it even started being given in the real world that they didn't even try to find that out because they keep telling you that they just simply would have been paid more. They could have found that out. That's a direct quote from people involved with Moderna, guys. They didn't want to know because clearly I think they knew that it didn't. Well, here you go. Hundreds of vaccinated people. And it continues on. Here's another one. There's no other explanation. Utah mom blames COVID vaccines after her 17-year-old athlete son and her husband both hospitalized with rare blood clots after getting the same mRNA injections. She says he began to have severe symptoms 24 hours after the Pfizer injection, claims the husband, who also hospitalized after receiving the Moderna injection. Health officials say Pfizer and Moderna are not associated with the blood clot risk, so it's not true. End of research, right? Except that the vast majority of blood clot reports, weird, are happening under the Pfizer injection. It's just that they don't want you to know that. Quote, there's no other explanation for what happened to my son and my husband. We're pretty certain it was the direct result of the injections. Public health officials, including the CDC, say that Pfizer and Moderna shots are simply not associated with that thing you're dealing with. So it's not true. Which we're seeing in a small number of people who received the J&J. Well, no, that's not even true. But the point is, they are pretending because we haven't reported it or seen it, even though there's thousands of reports for Pfizer and Moderna, that it's just not true. Does that sound like research? Are they talking to these people? Are they looking at their bodies? Are they finding out what's going on? No, they're not doing any of that. As we just told you, somebody who dealt with a death in their family has not even been contacted after months. Yet here they are screaming that they're doing their due diligence and it's all fake news. Here is somebody telling you it's in a medical field saying, so being in the medical field for a long time, now our hospital has come out with a 2-hour in-service course on how to treat and manage venous thromboembolism. Isn't that interesting? And other clotting disorders, plus anticoagulant therapy. The timing of the course is a direct link to the dangerous jab. Now, what's interesting is whether you think it's a direct link or not, why would they need new courses on specifically what they're telling you these injections are not causing? Seems ridiculous, because it is ridiculous. They're taking these courses because it's a problem that's increasingly growing. You could just, in general, Marcus Triton is a, you know, neuropathic doctor, or, you know, on and on. You could look into it himself. The point is, this other doctor chimes in and says, utterly false. Right. This other doctor that apparently knows his inner workings of his hospital, which there's no point, it doesn't. He's simply saying it's false because he doesn't like any insinuation that this dangerous thing is dangerous. Jimmy chimes in and says, something's going on. Even the CDC is investigating heart complications. But he goes, but this guy's a hack because he blocked me. And there's plenty of real world data that shows the safety of the vaccines. Pair is safe and effective because they told me it's safe and effective, and it's safe and effective. Yes, there are some case reports of myocarditis. You mean thousands of them? Yeah. And vaccine complications are very rare and pale in comparison. Right. Exactly. Just regurgitating the narrative. Well, he chimes in and says, well, the vaccine should confer a stronger and lasting, more robust immune response. It should also prevent asymptomatic spread. Great, great doctor here. I said, incorrect. What's crazy is that one only misses this if they are simply not looking. Here you are, as a doctor, shutting down information. Because here's the point of the study that I already showed you that clearly says, well, if you've had COVID, naturally, it's probably going to last you the rest of your life for your immunity. But here's the doctor chiming in and saying, but that's fake. And the vaccine is supposed to give you lasting, even though their documentation shows you in most cases, they don't know if this lasts longer than 14 days. Longer than, or actually, you know, speaking of that, I don't want to see, I should have just had this queued up. Here's the document where I showed, this is the FDA document that's got all this information in it in general. But when they talk about the lasting part of it, there is a part in here that clearly says they don't know. They don't know how long it will last. And this is new, right? Remember, this is a new document. I'm just going to give it 1 second and see if it pops out at me. Nah, it doesn't look like it. It is in this documentation, but I'll swing back around. But the point is that they're telling you in this document clearly that they don't know. And it's and by the way, it shouldn't be that hard to realize that because it's pretty much being discussed like that everywhere. But he's telling you that that's not true. And I just simply point to, you know, Nature, which is one of the most reputable locations for these things to be posted, and telling him, well, look, it's right there. It's telling you that that has more than what you're claiming. Oh, and then I just, of course, add to that that the reality of this document. Oh, there it is. There you go. I forgot that I added that. Of course, did it for myself. As always, one step ahead of myself. I said, oh, and this too. As you can see, right, this is the document I was just showing you. What are the benefits of this COVID vaccine? I think I went right past that. It says the duration of protection against COVID-19 is currently unknown. This is as of May 10th, 2021. As you can see in the document right at the bottom, May 10th, 2021. Okay, so how is this doctor standing up here and telling people that it lasts longer, right? It's longer lasting, robust response. Where is he getting this from? He's getting this from the narrative, from what the media says, claiming they're citing the science. Well, the only thing that matters is what the FDA is confirming in regard to what Moderna or Pfizer is telling you they can do. Based on that's where all the research comes from, what they've researched. It does not happen that way. And the real world, as of May 10th, is showing you they simply don't know how long it lasts. Yet he's willing to sit here and tell you that he knows, that it lasts longer, and that this is fake. It just goes to show you guys that it's incredible how the cognitive dissonance, or whether he just wants to lie for some reason. Going back to the main point, this guy's telling you that they are now rolling out their own in-service course about the very things they're telling you are not happening. 56-year-old Greek woman dies minutes after the second Pfizer shot. Healthy teen sent to the ER after Pfizer vaccine. CDC, as we know, is investigating heart issues. We know this. Now, here is Alex Berenson, who still has me blocked for some stupid reason, who is doing excellent work on COVID-19, yet is completely clueless when it comes to cannabis. Great tweet here, though. In 6 months, the CDC has already received nearly 100 reports of life-threatening heart inflammation post-COVID shots in people under 30. Now, remember, the study we just showed you was also talking about more than just under 30. Their study was between 21 and 56 and showing you that there's a lot more going on there that they're keeping from your view. But the point is, nearly 100 reports, that's more than double the number of similarly serious heart inflammation reports the CDC has received for all other vaccines ever. That's just like the idea of 20% of this being all COVID-19 and VAERS. It's becoming impossible to ignore, but they're doing it anyway. Now, here is CNN, of course, citing their expert, right? This is what we always show you. Expert says. Okay, well, what expert, right? And where is he tied to? Well, heart inflammation in young people could be due to behavior. Okay, so we're blaming you. It's because you, right? It's because you're fat. Except, alternatively, when COVID's discussed, we pretend like that's not true. No, you can't. If you're fat, that's not unhealthy. How dare you say that? That hurts my feelings. Well, it is unhealthy. It's probably the worst thing for you to be overweight. But the point is that they'll argue that, oh, it's because of your activity. You're doing stuff to your body. That's why. It just shows you how pick and choose they are. They'll just use whatever excuse they want while pretending it doesn't make sense elsewhere. But guess who? What expert is claiming that this is just not true? Oh, it looks like Gottlieb. You know, the guy who was on Trump's cabinet. He used to work for the FDA, I believe. Was the FDA? I'm just suddenly blanking on what exactly his job was, but it's irrelevant to the main point. But anyway, I've made this reference to what his current job is anyway. Gottlieb said he doesn't think the cases of heart inflammation change the risk-benefit balance for the COVID injection. Oh, well, that's great. Now, does he have any financial ties to that injection? Let's see if they list it in the article. Well, they don't say it anywhere. So CNN would never lie to you except, oh, wait a minute. He's a member of the board of directors for Pfizer. Isn't that interesting? So Scott Gottlieb, who, it was the FDA, former commissioner of the FDA, who is now on the board of Pfizer. That's what's called the revolving door of our broken, captured regulatory agencies, has a vested interest in Pfizer, right? He has a profit motive to make sure Pfizer continues to be good. So when he comes up and says, no, that thing that's being more associated with Pfizer than almost anything else, nah, that's not a problem. Now we can make more money. Now that is, of course, without a doubt, supposed to be divulged by CNN, but they don't do that because they're not real journalists, right? That should be clear by now. And I'll include this for you to look at for yourself. The document showing you that you have, if you've had this naturally, if you believe that's what's happening, even their information is showing you that you have a lifetime of antibodies because it's in your bone marrow, right? Which seems interestingly tied in with what they're doing with these injections, right? Also finding their way into your bone marrow because they're using other things that are dangerous. But for people for most of their lives, right? And on top of that, here's the other study that I keep showing you that found that uninfected adults, so people that didn't even have this, were already showing pre-existing antibody reactivity against SARS-CoV-2. So if in March 15th, they said most everybody in this country already unaffected or not seems to show pre-existing antibodies, and those things seem to last for the rest of your life, according to all of their research, why even get this thing? Right? Because they want to scare you into thinking that if you don't, that you're a bad person and that you're going to risk your grandma's life. But that's not true, according to their scientific research. Well, they just want to make you seem crazy. And speaking of crazy, here's another interesting story. Doctor censured for suggesting vaccine psychosis led husband to murder wife. Now, this is a really interesting story on the way that this goes down. Now, of course, the title makes it seem a lot more severe, but listen to how it actually happened and realize how scary this is. Health Ministry said Thursday that it would summon a doctor for a reprimand. Don't you love that? Summon a doctor for a reprimand. After she suggested, not said as a matter of fact, but suggested that a man who allegedly murdered his wife last week did so as a result of psychosis induced by the coronavirus vaccine. Now, no, that's not exactly what she said. She simply said that this has been shown to lead to psychosis. And if that's the case, then maybe that's something we should consider. Oh, no, she's being objective and considering outside possibilities. We need to stop her. That's what's happening right now. The woman, an obstetrician, I know I'm mispronouncing that, made the comments during a discussion on a WhatsApp group with 250 participants. 250 people on a WhatsApp group. So I don't care if it's 1,000 people. You're on a WhatsApp group. So you can call that private, I guess. I mean, it is really. You're in a group. So it's not, you're not streaming this on YouTube, right? And yet Channel 12 News reported on what this doctor said in her private group and is being reprimanded for doing so. This needs to scare you in the direction the world is going. You are not allowed to have opinions anywhere that cross this narrative. Now, it says members of the group were discussing the negative effects of coronavirus lockdowns that have had, on people, right? But you see, you're allowed to discuss this in the context of she's a fake news vaccine person. But when you actually talk about the lockdown, of course, they would never admit that it's causing psychosis, right? As usual. But it goes on to say that at a certain point in the conversation, it turned to the murder of Diana Ross. Lockdowns have been blamed for exacerbating domestic tensions and violence. Okay, so the doctor who works at Ramat Gan Sheba Medical Center then offered, quote, regarding the murder yesterday, as strange as it may sound, there have been psychotic and neurological conditions as a result of the vaccine. This case is too strange. That's it. Now, point out where she said, I think it's the vaccine that made him kill her. Right? Because that didn't happen. You see, what happened was a very logical argument. Well, have we seen psychotic and neurological conditions as a result? Yes. So this case is strange. Is clearly going, well, maybe we should consider whether the psychosis could have played a role, but she didn't even say that. She simply said psychosis is being caused by this vaccine, and this case is quite strange. Yes, it's obvious what she's pointing at, but that is what doctors, scientists, researchers, anybody objective should be doing. Looking at things that have an obvious tie and then finding out if they're valid. Not ignoring things because narratives said they don't count. This is the world we're in right now. This is the science we're seeing. That's science in quotes, guys. It's not science if you're actively ignoring entire discussion points. It says the doctor who works, or it says by many accounts, Raz's relationship with her husband, Amir Raz was, that's weird, hold on. By many accounts, Raz's relationship with her husband, Amir Raz was, oh, at least outwardly, a healthy one. Prior to him allegedly stabbing her and blah, 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 blah. It means nothing to me. Quote, this point, a long relationship described as long and compassionate, the doctor wrote, and suddenly he doesn't know what came over him and experiences a blackout. All right, so that's the point. Saying she's looking into the topic. It's a long relationship described as loving and compassionate. Turns out he suddenly doesn't know what came over him and experiences a blackout. Now, could he be lying? Sure. So in that case, when we're talking about the fact that we know there's been psychotic episodes around this or issues and neurological problems, I mean, even more specifically, they couldn't stop talking about things that caused mental problems in regard to COVID-19. But now that we have an obvious connection between the spike protein causing those, weird how the topic got real quiet, isn't it? Isn't that funny? It's not funny at all. In fact, they know that that's probably what's causing it, so they just quietly put to bed the part where that spike protein could lead to those neurological problems. Even though we can prove to you that there's obvious issues of things like, I don't know, targeted drug delivery to the brain using magnetic nanoparticles, like the lipid nanoparticles we're talking about, and how people like Dr. Pilevsky can speak in front of Congress and tell you these things enter the brain, or we can see based on the technology and the research that that is clearly happening. But yet then dismiss the possibility that they're leading to psychosis or possible neurologic issues, right? It's an obvious thing to talk about. Just like it was obvious to point out the spike protein problems or the mask issues back when we could see it then, and it's only just now being discussed. It says when other group participants expressed shock at her insinuation that the vaccine may have caused Raz to kill his wife, which is not even really what she said, she added that, of course, odds are it's not, but it made me think of the possibility. How is this something you get criticized for? You are not allowed to think outside the box. You are only allowed to think about what you're allowed to think about. This is science today. It says psychosis is not a known effect of that. Well, that's just not true. It's simply because they have yet to acknowledge it. They're claiming that. This is a doctor who's openly saying, well, yes, obviously we've seen it. And yet the news can step in and be like, no, fake news. The doctor's watching it and seeing it in her in her real world. And this journalist can step in and say, no, no, no. You know why fake news? Because we've decided fake news. Because the narrative says, no, now we're going to reprimand you, slap you on the wrist, which is exactly what's happening. Of course, some rare neurological effects have been reported, but these have been physical and such and have not been. Oh, there, watched it refresh right in front of us, as always, which is why I didn't have it highlighted. Because they're probably changing something as we speak. But they're telling you, yes, there's been effects, but we can't prove it. So is it not, it's not a known side effect because we refuse to admit that it's there. They expressed outrage at the suggestion that's clearly tied to a possible correlation. But how dare you suggest something we don't want to think about? And then it just goes on to scream, and how dare she do something like this? A physician that has no, blah, blah, blah. Spreading fake news. But didn't you just say we don't know? So how is it fake news if you don't know? You see what I keep pointing out? They're saying fake news to things that are unverified. But that's not because they think that unverified means it could be true. To them, unverified is dismissed. Theirs is unverified. It's dismissed. The fact that there's neurological problems, we haven't proven that, so it's dismissed. It's not true, fake news, anti-science, because we don't know. Does that sound right to you? That's where we are. Oh, by the way, here's medical news today from 2015, back before it was illegal to say this out loud. Psychosis may be triggered by antibody reaction to brain protein. Fake news! A new study published in the journal Biological Psychiatry investigates the role that antibodies may play in case of psychosis, suggesting that psychosis symptoms such as hallucinations and delusions that could lead to people murdering each other may be triggered by an antibody response to a protein in the brain. You just can't make this stuff up. It is ridiculous that I can stumble through this or people can send me this stuff, which is a lot. Half the show every day comes from people like Huxley or Doom or any number of people in the chat that send me stuff. It's right there. It's all in front of us. It's just about whether you choose to be objective enough to stand back and look at it. That's how crazy this is. But so we're fake news. She's probably going to lose her job for simply suggesting a logical possibility about something that is clearly possible. But who cares? Because narrative says no today. Well, which logically leads us to the obvious. The thing that's fake news that'll never happen, right? Justin Trudeau confirms Canadian government is working on a national certification of vaccine status for those who want to travel internationally. But it's not a vaccine passport, though, right? Right? It's a vaccine safety go travel thing, or you know, whatever the ridiculous thing they throw out there and pretend it's not the same thing as a vaccine passport. This is exactly what we told you was coming. Exactly. And as I said, which was always the plan, verifiably so. And we said as much. And here we are. You all ready to stand up yet? Anybody? Everybody out, you ready to start standing up and making something happen? And as always, the last thing I'm asking for is violence. But finally, to finish off, a quick note just to show you that there are people out there in positions to lose a lot who are standing up and putting their foot down. Now, Cole Beasley on the Buffalo Bills is somebody, as he on his to his own admission, is somebody who, at least in his argument, is on the latter part of his career that is willing to take this risk. And he acknowledges that people that may be in the beginning of their career may not have the freedom to speak out like that. But nonetheless, he's risking his career, and it's commendable. And what he's doing is standing up. And look, he's not even really taking a stance in regard to danger or what this could do. He's simply taking a stance about choice. He's saying, you don't have a right to put this on me. And you know what? He's going to live his life going forward based on the fact that he is living his life. And if he goes out and you don't like, he's not wearing a mask and you're scared, then you walk away and go the other direction, because he's living his life the way he wants to, because that's freedom. That's actual freedom. That's medical freedom. That is human rights. But not in this country, apparently. But let's see what happens, because this is what we need more of. I'm going to follow and see if anything, you know, see what actually goes on and there's going to be repercussions. Now, actually, I was going to talk more about the NFL part, including with this, but I'll get to that later. Just what's going on with the NFL is shocking. Maybe I didn't. We still have it over here. Hold on. No, that's all that Wells Fargo stuff I was going to look at later. But the NFL came out with a grouping of mandates for these people, like testing every single day, stuff that is crazy for those that are unvaccinated. And so this is where this is coming from. He says, look, I'm going to live my one life like I want to regardless. Everyone, I'm Cole Beasley and I'm not vaccinated. I will be outside doing what I do. I will be in the public. If you're scared of me, then steer clear or get vaccinated. Point blank, period. I may die of COVID, but I'd rather die actually living. I have family members whose days are numbered. If they want to come see me and stay at my house, then they're coming regardless of protocol. And you know what? Because they probably want to be around the riches that he has, they'll probably do it anyway. I don't play for the money anymore, he says. My family has been taken care of. Find me if you want. My way of living and my values are more important to me than the dollar. I love my teammates and enjoy playing ball because all of the outside BS goes out the window in these moments. I just want to win the Super Bowl and enjoy these relationships that will be created along the way. I'm not going to take meds for a leg that isn't broken. I'd rather take my chances with COVID and build up my immunity that way. Eat better, drink water, exercise, and do what I think is necessary to be a healthy individual. That is my choice based on my experiences and what I think is best. I'll play for free this year to live life how I've lived it from day one. If I'm forced to into retirement, so be it. I've enjoyed the times I've had. I'll get to live freely, with my wife, kids, and extended family forever. We'd get to enjoy the times we have missed from the sacrifices we've had to make just so I could play this wonderful game. So either way, it's a win-win. That's where I stand. Thank you for everyone who's been supportive throughout this process. A lot of other NFL players hold my position as well, but aren't in the right place in their careers to be so outspoken. I feel for you, and I'm hoping I'm doing my part to represent you guys well. Now, you know, just based on this stance, this is what an honorable person looks like. Not to suggest that I know this person, but to take this stance and put yourself at risk for something you believe in, that's what a real hero looks like. Now, the point is that he is saying to you that he's going to do what he wants to do. Now, when he says in there, get vaccinated or don't, he's not saying he believes in it, in my opinion. He's simply saying choice. You want to do it? Go do it. The idea that we're in this world now where you get to force that choice on me because you're scared about something you don't understand, that is not going to end. That is not going to fly. And he is putting his foot down, and I commend him for that. What we need more of is exactly that, right? We need the ability, the drive to stand up and put yourself out there to stop what's going on. We need more of that. Imagine if everybody was saying that. You realize how quickly this would slow down? It's on us to put our foot down. It's on us to stop this right now. Because if we don't, it's never going to stop. As Corbett said the other day, when does this stop? When we say it stops. If we keep going along with this, it's going to keep going. And the reality is, you have all the stuff in front of you. I asked Brock to clip up the idea of the cheat sheet yesterday, so I'm going to hopefully put that one out for you guys and just have a quick thing you can show people. You know, a 2-minute clip that shows you the cheat sheet of the most important things. And, you know, there's like 3 things from today that I'm probably going to want to add to that. I should probably keep growing that and make a page of that on T-Lab or something. But information's out there, guys. As always, all the links are sourced in the bottom of this show. Research it. Think about it. Show people what I'm showing you and the fact how the staggering reality that we have everything in front of us, including experts and PhDs and scientists that are telling you this is exactly the reality. And yet people look at CNN and Fox News and go, oh, fake news. Okay, well, then that's fake news. I don't think that's the majority. In fact, I believe quite strongly that it's not. All we need to do is realize that it's not and stand up. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
What if the experts are wrong? What if quarantining the healthy doesn't actually save lives? What if wearing a mask in public is not effective?
If you do not have a mask, you cannot ride public transportation, sir.
My name is Dr. Jeff Barkey, and I'm here representing thousands of physicians across the country whose voices are being silenced because we don't agree with the mainstream media and the experts who are telling us what to do.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
Never in the history of this great republic have we quarantined the healthy. Never in the history of this great republic have we told churchgoers that it's illegal for you to exercise your First Amendment right of freedom of religion. Never in the history of this country have we been told that you can't go to church because it's non-essential but you can go get an abortion because that's essential. Never before in our country have we let criminals out of jail, but we've told you you can't exercise your Second Amendment right and protect yourself by purchasing a firearm. When liquor stores are deemed essential, but your businesses are deemed non-essential, there's something wrong going on.
We called people's utilities this week and made them pay what could have been their last check to us to turn their lights on in a global health pandemic. But you don't care about that. You didn't want to meet.
This booklet, the Declaration of Independence and our U.S. Constitution, was never designed to restrain the people. It was designed to restrain the government. We're realizing that the fatality rate of this virus is in the ballpark of a bad seasonal influenza. Do not let your voices be silenced. We will see eventually that this government-imposed cure is going to be worse than the virus itself.
You're choking me, bro. Stop. Help, man. This shit ain't right, bro.
But what's happening now is unemployment reaches 20 to 30 million people. Is those folks are now becoming dependent on the government. And what government dependency causes is a larger, more tyrannical government.
Look. He ain't even do nothing.
We the people want to put our government back in its place. We want a small representative government, not a large tyrannical government. I'm here representing thousands of physicians around the country whose voices must be heard.
We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home.
So you guys are asking me to leave the store for not wearing a mask when I have a medical condition, even though yours was pulled under
all
your
you
nose.
Need is a note that says
I don't
can't
have to bring a note, and yours isn't even on.
You can do whatever you want to do.
It's America, right?
Listen,
I cannot wear a mask.
Get out.
Do not let your voices be silenced.